tomorrow and in the weeks to come. If you have a comment, just post it at RadioInsideScoop.com. This is Mark Levine.
Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Cold River Mountain Watch. Cold River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Don't you just love the way John Fox says, cussin' and a-discussin'? I think we're going to have to craft a certificate suitable for framing and make him an honorary hillbilly or something. Wouldn't that be, yeah, that's a good idea, isn't it? I'm feeling a little froggy this evening. I was touched almost beyond words when I saw the news about Bank of America's decision to phase out funding of mountaintop removal. You know, when the show was over, I put my ear to the wind, and on the passing breeze, I could almost hear, like something out of, here's our obligatory nightly Star Trek reference, something like that shot of Kirk in the middle of the planet screaming, "Con!" as Don Blankenship caught a terminal case of the turtle squirts. No! Yep. Because, you know, it's not like Massey Energy doesn't already have a brand spanking new, fresh, little, rejected by the Supreme Court $225 million judgment against it. Yeah, that's million. And the possibility of having a judgment in the future in the amount of $75 million reinstated against it. I love it when the good guys start winning, don't you? Yeah, yes, 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 yes. And I wanted to start with a couple of emails as well that had come in because, it's so gratifying when you all pick up on the sense of victory. This from Horn Critic at Large, Reverbo. I was listening last night and heard your letter in response to the so-called Friends of Coal article. Subject, a lot of meaning in three words. I was listening last night and heard your letter in response to the so-called Friends of Coal article in the Register Herald. As you were reading and talking about the latest news on mountaintop removal front, I clicked over to the blog and stared at the photo of what's left of Cayford Mountain. Needless to say, the end of your show was extremely moving. Perhaps the people who really care about what happens to your beautiful state and its proud citizens have absorbed the meaning of West Virginia's motto. It's on the state seal and reads, Montani semper liberi. Mountaineers are always free. Well, thanks, Reverbo. I thought that meant that the library was on a mountain or the Mount the Librarian or something. But no, mountaineers are always free. You have all come a long way toward freeing yourselves of misery, destruction, and death from those who exist only to rape and disgrace your state and are only interested in themselves. From these enemies of goodness, health, and light, you will be free. And of that, there is no doubt. And Reverbo closes by saying, as an American and a human being who understands we're all in this together, I'm with you. Thanks, Reverbo.
This morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. vision just doesn't matter, cause we're all in this together. In the city, we're all in this together. The city's changing, cause we're changing, and we're all in this together. Every 12 seconds, someone remembers that we're all in this together. In the kitchen, your rent control apartment, we're all in this together. Come on, baby, I don't mean to rush you. I only wanted to reach out and touch you. I've got to start to open my heart. Think about jumping ship before it sinks, but we are all in this together. Ask a scientist, it's quantum physics, we are all in this together. And on the subway, we feel like strangers, but we're all in this together. Yeah, I love you, and you love her, loves him, but we are all in this together. You know, baby, there's never been protection in all the history of human connection. Come on, darling, it's all right to show me. You don't ever need to be lonely once you start to open.
It's that snare at the end that just sets that marching beat. That just, oh, God, I love that song. Ben Lee, we're all in this together. And I owe John Fox big time for turning me on to that song. What a magnificent thing this is. And we are. We're all in this together. And you, no matter where you are, can you imagine? Do you ever stop to think? Yes, you do. That's why this exists. But do you ever stop to ponder who is with you when you're listening to this program? Do you ever stop to wonder about someone with an iPod at sea? Or someone on a plane flying across a continent? Or sitting in a house by the Gulf Coast, or in the shadow of mountain peaks that have ice on them year around, and little old me here on a plateau of a up at the mouth of a holler. And we are all in this together. And if that doesn't just raise the little hairs on the back of your neck when you think about the power that you possess, when you think about how you have rejected the aloneness and the separation that the right wing and the so-called conservatives and the fundamentalists and all their evil, slimy ilk have tried to force upon you. Oh, man. One notch up, and I swear I'm speaking in tongues. I swear. And by the way, John Fox, the only thing that could possibly make that song any better is one verse that gets out of the city. Now we're in this together in the country too. In the mountains, on the sea, in the air, northern hemisphere, southern, western hemisphere, eastern hemisphere, pole to pole, and wrapping the whole world round. Man, I don't know where this show is going tonight, but right now, so far, I feel like I've been sweating hot in the noonday sun and just got a big old swig of ice cold water, clean, pure water that quenches me and drenches me and flows the whole world round. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. It's Mark.
Hey, Mark Levine.
I wanted to explain why I was playing hooky today.
You were playing hooky, and we need barring a note from your mother, this better be good.
Well, I have a very good excuse.
Okie doke.
Would a note from President-elect Obama be good enough for you?
Well, yeah, that'll do.
Well, I don't know that I can get officially a note from him.
As long as it's not like something off, you know, Welcome Back, Cotter, where it says, you know, please excuse Mark, signed Mark's president.
Obama.
Yeah, Mark's president.
Well, that might work. No, but I am actually in the District of Columbia. In fact, I'm illegally driving and talking on a cell phone, which is illegal. I'm announcing I'm breaking the law.
I'm running with scissors. I'm running with scissors.
I know, exactly. So if I have to suddenly stop talking, you'll know why. There's a police officer nearby, but...
You don't have a speakerphone?
Well, I do, but I think the sound would be awful for you. This is my speakerphone sound.
It's actually better, Mark.
No way.
Way.
Hey, well, I'll be happy to talk on the speakerphone. Okay. That's actually legal in D.C. I was trying to break the law.
Hey, I serve on the side of the angels.
Well, I'm surprised that this is that good, frankly. But all right, if you say so, I believe you. In any case, I'll talk more about it on my show next week. But I wanted to officially announce, I guess it'll be unofficial now, it'll be official on my show, but I am applying for a job in the Obama administration.
Well, bust my buttons.
That doesn't mean I'll get one. That just means I'm applying. Myself and 300 million other Americans can also apply. You just go to change.gov if any of our listeners want to apply. It's a very open process. But they were giving us some of the ins and outs of what to do and how to, get noticed and hopefully get your job in there. Apparently, right now, there's about 350,000 people applying for 7,000 positions. So that would give me a 1 in 50 shot. That's not terrible.
It's better than playing the lottery.
It certainly is. So that's what I was doing today. I was hoping I would get back in time. Oop, I'm right near a police officer. But this is legal. I'm talking in the speakerphone.
Right. Stand down from sweat condition alpha, Mark.
Exactly. Well, you know, I actually support these laws saying you can't use a cell phone while driving. So I guess I'm a huge hypocrite.
Well, no, I mean, you know, that's like me. Apart from the fact that it makes me look like a member of the Borg, I rather enjoy Bluetooth technology when it works.
Well, yes, it does. So I am driving. Oh, great. I'll cut in front of the cop while talking on a cell phone. Okay, great.
Now take a swig of the pint of liquor in your back pocket and just go for the trifecta.
So
sacrifices I make for the horn. Oh, my God. They're going to cart me away. Anyway, so far I think I'm okay. But I just simply wanted to announce that. I think that I probably shouldn't talk long. So I wanted to let listeners know what I was doing, and I will give a full report next week on my show. And I thought as I go through the process, I would let people know what it's all about, let them know what their elected president is doing. I can tell you this. So far, it is an incredibly streamlined process. They had people from the Clinton administration, from the Carter administration, talking about how they did it. In the room, there wasn't anyone from the Bush administration. Don't know why. But they were talking about how they did it, and it appears that Obama, frankly, is way ahead of the ball, that he is ahead of other administrations and getting all this done, and he's really hitting the ground running. And I'm just very impressed. Also by professionalism and also by the fact that they really are opening it to everyone. I mean, anyone can apply. You just stick your resume in.
But you will talk about this more next week, Mark, but I assume you're looking for a lawyer in position.
I am. My goal, I put this on my application. I said my goal is to take every single memo that John Yoo wrote and do the legal effect of burning it.
Beautiful.
John Yoo, as I'm sure our listeners remember, was one of my classmates at Yale Law School. He's also the author of the torture memo, the enemy combatants memo, the spying on Americans memo. You name a Bill of Rights, and John Yoo has written a memo to shred it. And my hope would actually be to take his job and to unshred the Bill of Rights, as it were. And so that's the job I'm applying for.
And when you put it on there, when you put the information on there, Mark, did you say my former classmate, John Yoo, so they'd know that you were sort of on the same standing, or that guy who graduated beneath me at something like that?
You know what? I had better grades than John Yoo. And you know what? That's a good point in my interview. I need to point out. But I also didn't suck. Let me think of a better word. I didn't brown nose. Can you say that? Let's just say he was very, very good at saying whatever the conservatives wanted to hear.
No, okay, you had it. Yeah, he was a suck up.
Well, yeah, okay, he's a suck up. That's the word. Anyway, so that's what I'm applying for. Anyway, I'll get more details next week, but I just want to let listeners know why I wasn't on today, and then I have a very good excuse.
Okay, well, pull over and get your ticket now.
I think I passed the cop. I think I'm okay, but I'll let you go. And I'll tune in. I'll see everybody next week.
Well, we'll be rooting for you, Mark.
I appreciate that.
All right. Take care and drive carefully.
I will.
All right. Bye now. Host of the Radio Inside Scoop, Mark Levine, putting his money where his mouth is. Going to take that highfalutin law degree and try to put it to good use. Man, you know, we were just talking at the beginning of the program about what we can accomplish. Don't think for a minute that while perhaps we try to, those of us who are behind the microphone may try to inspire you, don't think for an instant that you don't inspire us. And you have inspired Mark Levine to go and put the rubber on the road. Literally. And wouldn't that be sweet? You know, before you can do it, you have to dream it. And wouldn't it be sweet? You know, the Democrats in Congress did not find the guts or the gumption to impeach George Bush or John Yoo or any of the stinking criminals that have infested the government of we, the people of the United States, seeking to form a more perfect union. But that doesn't say that criminal charges can't later be filed. And would it not be beautiful to know that your friend, my friend, our comrade, our brother, Mark Levine, had a hand in chasing down a war criminal, in chasing down a person guilty, 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 of the most perfidious, profound crimes against humanity, John Yoo. What would we do here on the Horn on the day that we found out that Mark Levine, perhaps in tandem with many others, dedicated people who love the Constitution of the United States and who take seriously the principle that we are a nation of, we are a, the principle that we are a nation of laws and not of men and women. What would we do on the day that we saw the footage of John Yoo with his hands behind his back, his wrists encased in steel bracelets, being frog-marched through a gate that would close behind him and not open for him again for, yea, verily, years? It would sort of feel all worthwhile now, wouldn't it? So, kudos to Mark Levine for leading by example and putting his name out there and putting his reputation on the line to try to make this country a better place, to try to restore this once great republic that can be great again. Wow, that is really, really neat. And I wanted to share something with you. You know, toward the end of the program last night, I referenced a generous gift contribution to the Horn that came in honor of another individual. And just because I don't see that put forward a lot, I've seen it some, but I don't see it put forward a lot. I just made inquiry after the show. And the contributor said, thanks for the mention last night. I heard it and was surprised but happy. Talking of the person the contribution was sent in honor of, she says, he's my sweetheart, and he listens to your show religiously, except when he can't. And I've become a recent and regular listener, too. I'm learning a lot, and thank you for that. Now, here's the cool part. This is the really, really cool part. I love it. I love the way that this audience has a way of audience, my rear-end audience. No, hell no. We're collaborators. We are co-respondents. We are, we're all in this together. But she says, we talked about Christmas and birthday presents, and he didn't really want anything. I suggested donating to his favorite show, yours, and he thought it was a great idea. I'll be sending another donation in January for his birthday. Actually, it feels really good to do something on the holidays for someone, something that is meaningful to the person, but not part of the uber-consumer materialistic practice of Christmas that has become the norm in our society. So thanks to you, and I wish you and your loved ones a warm and wonderful holiday season. That about knocked me out of my boots last night. And some other suggestions have come along as well for how we can, because you know how uncomfortable I get talking about this topic, and apparently as uncomfortable as I get, I need to talk about it in greater depth, at least judging by what I read from all of you. And that fact is that we seek, on a monthly basis, the stated goal is $2,000 a month. We haven't seen $2,000 a month in forever. So what that means is that Agnes and I dig deep to keep part of the bills paid. And what we do get goes toward keeping things going. And yeah, if you go way back to, I guess it was what, March 8th of, oh, I can't remember, but there was a conversation had a couple of years ago. I think it was March. I don't know. Where, among others, Wayne the Boss Man talked a little bit about how all this came to be. You will know that none of this would have happened without the direct action of Wayne, and that's why Wayne is the boss man, apart from the fact that he has a profound ability for organizing and for conveying the most essential and important ideas and creating vision. Wayne put every piece of equipment that is in here. I mean every piece of equipment that got us started. And it was a hefty list. And just so you'll know, you know, a few months back I was talking about the fact that we'd had to go out and get some components and some technology and so forth. And we did it on credit, which I hate. And, well, Wayne ate that bill too. Because it does take every last penny that comes in to keep this going. And then some. I talk about the heroism of and selflessness of Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Your contributions to the White Rose keep this going too. Because, well, we hang by a thread. We genuinely do. And the thread becomes a little more frayed with each passing month that we don't meet the goal. And all we can do is determine to soldier on for as long as is humanly possible. But I said something a couple of nights ago saying that it was looking pretty grim. It is. It is. Because we may take a funding hit in January that will be, I don't know. I simply don't know for a fact. I don't know for sure. But these, you know, personally, that what is happening to the economy doesn't happen in a vacuum. And it's like dominoes. And I know that a lot of you have been hit. I know that, suffice to say that it's possible for things to get incredibly tight for organizations as well. So we're gonna find out a lot between now and the end of January, early February, about whether this goes forward. And the fact that haven't been able to hit our monthly goal. I mean, you think about it. We talk about $2,000. That's $24,000 a year. And bear in mind, nobody's getting paid. Let me reiterate that. Nobody is getting paid. Not the hosts, not the people working behind the scenes, no one. So when we talk about what it takes to keep this going, oh, Lord, and you know, that's the sad thing. Way back when Air America was going through its bankruptcy, we were offering almost as much programming as they were on a live basis. But over time, we have lost people who were doing shows because they couldn't do it anymore. And you can't ascribe blame to that. You can, as I did, feel profoundly sad and wish, oh God, wish that any number of the organizations that we have gone to and said, look what we're doing. Look what we're doing. And look how well we're doing it. And had them say, ah, boy, I tell you what, that's real good. That's great. You know what? We need liberal talk radio. We sure do. We need us some liberal talk radio. Because I tell you what, I get sick death listening to that Rush Limbaugh and that Hannity and them lying Republicans. I get sick of it. Just makes me sick. And we say, well, you know, we're not talking about asking you to buy a pig in a poke or invest in a pig in a poke. The pig is out of the poke and it ain't a pig. It's a swan. And look what we're doing. Well, when we were having meetings like that, that was along about the time that Air America was hemorrhaging something on the order of $80,000 a day back before the bankruptcy. Literally, what kept Air America going for one day would have kept the horn going for 1 year. And that's assuming we were able to pay people. I sit here constantly humbled by the efforts that everyone puts out, and I ache in my soul wanting to be able to pay people. Because that's at the heart and soul of all this. This isn't corporate-oriented. This isn't upper management-oriented. This is worker-oriented. This is grassroots-oriented. And if nothing, we have the profoundest respect for the activity and the effort and the labor that makes this country go. And yet we meet with organizations who say, we sure do need to have something to beat back against them radical right-wingers on the radio. And we say, well, here we are. We're doing it. Well, that's great. That's great. I tell you, I'm proud of that. Well, why don't you help us do it? Well, we'll help you. I tell you what, you just call me next week, and we'll get you a whole bunch of guests that can talk on your little radio station. And you look at them and go, no, we don't need guests. We need money. Oh, you want money? Oh, we ain't got no money. And then a week later, after you've gotten back from your meeting, you're reading through the internets. And you find a story that says that the person you were talking to, who told you we ain't got no money, just dropped a ton of it on a communications firm that is owned by somebody's brother-in-law who lives next door to that person who told you they didn't have any money, dropped $1 million or so to run ads on CNN that hates them in the first place. So that's what we're up against. For the last year and a half or so, you've kept this going. That war against the isolation, that war against the separation, that determination to breach the artificial divide that has been created between and among liberals and progressives, that we and you, all of us working together in this together, have put forward, you have funded on your own. And as well, we have had the partial sponsorship of those that I call the bravest, hardest working people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch. But as this economy tanks, and continues to tank, frankly, the future is anything but certain. And that's a tough thing to say this holiday season. It's a tough thing to say on the 4th of July. It's a tough thing to say on a rainy day in early spring in April. It's a miserably difficult thing to say with the leaves turning on the trees, holiday season, schmoliday season. It's hard to say this kind of stuff. But my promise to you, and the promise of I will dare speak for anyone else who cares to cares to let me do so, is that we'll be here as long as the lights are on. We're going to John Henry this thing. And when the lights go out and people start coming and carting away equipment, that's when we'll quit. And that's probably when I start standing on the back stoop and yelling instead. You know, I've said we have equipment needs. We've got $1,000 worth of repairs to the phone box that gets your phone calls through that we can't afford. And so we just kind of hope for the best and hope that it holds out another day. Little audio signal processor thingies that we need. $100 here, $200 there. And frankly, computer needs. Because we've gone through some computers. Because we're hard on them. I mean, we're not sitting here, you know, smacking them or kicking them or anything. But doing everything that has to happen at the same time, it puts some wear and tear on a machine. And we also have to have backups. See, for instance, just as by extension, we run two machines when we do what we do here, whether it's live or remotely produced. We run two machines for reasons that really don't bear to going into. But as long as you've got those two machines, if one goes down, you're screwed. So that means if you've got two, you've got to have two in backup. Redundancy. And anybody with a background in systems analysis or anything like that understands that concept of redundancy. So that's the kind of thing we're looking at. You know, the fees that we pay for our telephony, our internet service provision, which is contract based, and I guess we've got another contract. I don't know. I think the contract will either come up in August or a year from August. But we're on the hook for that bill, and it's almost $1,000 a month by itself. For either the next, till August or a year from August. And Lord, it would be nice to upgrade those facilities. Facilities? Oh Lord, you know, we still maintain the dream of having a much larger, much more adequate studio at some point in time. We dream of having the ability to go and take what you contribute and make your contributions even more profound by going out and building the listenership. And I do what of that I can, and you do too. So all of these things play into what it takes to keep this going. You know, there's a power bill. There's a variety of recurring monthly expenses. And, you know, there's travel expenses, too. We would be out on the road doing a whole lot more out in public were we able simply to get there and go and do those things. But. So anyway, I hope that fills in a few of the gaps. I sat playing it, trying to find out how deep the hole we're in is. And by my best guess, it's something like $5,000 or more. Just in terms of what we don't meet out of our goal every month. But to be brutally candid, I lost track after a while because it just got a little bit depressing. Oh, mother, go run the bath. But we'll be here. We will be here for as long as the lights are on. And that is, that's my sincerest promise. Now, enough of that. That was not conversation radio. That was just, I don't know, a little infomercial, I guess. Your thoughts. Where do you want the program to go this evening? It is absolutely wide open. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's the toll-free number, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Stack them up. There's six lines here, and they are all yours. Any time you want, for anything you want to bring. I was tickled and gratified to see, just as I came on the air, that the good news about Bank of America ending, phasing out its financing of mountaintop removal, that had made, well, it was posted not too awfully long back at the top of thinkprogress.org with a horrifying photograph of a mountaintop removal job. This is profound stuff. It is really profound stuff because it does combine with well, there's a synergy. With any luck at all, in another year or so, there won't be, well, when we talk about Massey Energy, we will talk about something that used to be. Because you can't just walk around with a $225 million judgment against you that has the appeal of which has been rejected by the Supreme Court and not have to write the check sooner or later. And, of course, there's more in the pipeline. And there's another one that has been accepted by the Supreme Court that could possibly add another $75 million to that number. Sooner or later, shareholders seeing that kind of stuff are going to start dumping that stock. Now, I'm no stock analyst by any stretch of the imagination. I don't think I could afford a share of Ford stock or GM stock right now, and you know what that's going for. But anybody who has Massey Energy stock in their portfolio is begging to be beggared, begging to be broken on the roulette wheel of Las Vegas on Manhattan Island, otherwise known as Wall Street. Because Massey is going down, 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 down. And why anybody would want to stay on that sinking ship is beyond me. Know anybody with Massey stock? Tell them they might want to get out of it, because it ain't going to get better. Mm-mm, no, no. And what this all says about the Coal River Wind Project is entirely, oh, Lord, there are things that are coming together here that are forming intersections like the filament lines in a spider's web that touch so many different points. We're closer than we have ever been to putting mountaintop removal in the past tense. And I'm so proud to have played a part, however small it may be, so proud to have played a part, along with so many others who have played so much a larger one. It literally takes my breath away. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Sandra. Hey.
What's going on?
You know, I'm kind of in research paper hell, if you really want to know.
Oh, I remember that hell.
Well, it don't get no easier when you get older.
I can only imagine.
You know that document, the Chicago style. You know, I just want to shoot myself in the head. But anyway, you know, I was just listening to you about the state of things with the network. You know, and I just shook my head when you told that story about, I didn't get the whole deal, but that dude who, oh, I don't have any money. I mean, you know, that's the problem with the, quote, left. They don't, you know, it's like fun these bitches. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and don't think it's not because I went into the meeting without showering or shaving or anything.
No, no.
Because it's, I'm not telling tales out of school, but I'm not the only one this has happened to.
Yeah, well, no, but it's the same story. I've heard this before with, you know, other people involved in the industry, and it's just sort of, you know, just really, I don't know, pervasive. And it's just kind of like, how much information do you need to get before you can see how the other side has, you know, turned it into the success that the Republican Party had. That plays into it. You have to be a fool not to make that connection. It might be sort of on the downturn now.
It is. No, you're right, Sandra. You do have to be a fool. And we've got some of those.
But, and it's like the money, we on the left, we're forever holding our hand out, and the right is funded by corporations, rich individuals, whatever, because they need to keep the government on their side. I mean, it's a pretty easy equation, you see?
Yes.
And I just, it made me sick just listening to you. I'm like, are you kidding me with this? Not that I'm thinking that you are, rolling in it, but I would like to think that during the time.
Oh, I'm rolling in something, Sandra. It just ain't money.
Exactly. But I would just like to think that, there's a building process like with any endeavor. And to keep hearing you talk about this wall that you're constantly up against, I'm just sort of, I know you're frustrated, but it's, it's a bit of a downer to me because now's the time for you to be exploding because we need the voice to keep this Obama on the right track. You know what I'm saying? It ain't over with. It's just beginning.
I know. I know exactly what you're talking about. And when you say frustration, without downplaying your understanding, sister, you ain't said the half of it.
Yeah. No, I don't. Yeah, I listen. I mean, you're plugging along at this, all the time. And it must, you must come up, it must get demoralizing at some point for you.
I do. And the fact that the real fact, though, is the reason that I don't just walk over and smack my head into the door frame once in a while. Okay, I do. Is the people who do keep this going.
No, I, yeah.
And the thing is, when you look at the dedication of those who are committed to keeping independent, liberal, progressive conversation alive, you want to find those, you want to just find those money people and grab them by the throat. Well, that's going to help the next campaign. But you do. Look at this. Do you understand the power of this? Because I think maybe at the bottom level, Sandra, for all that they carp and gripe and complain about, we hate that Rush Limbaugh, they don't understand what he's done.
Well, no, I think it's a level of arrogance. It's like, I don't know, I was listening to some show, and they talked about Eric Altman or somebody who's in the mainstream media talking about, just sort of dismissing the right-wing radio still. And it's just sort of stunning to me that someone in his position is that naive, that they don't understand populism goes on both sides,
Well, exactly. And there, well, look, there's snobbery in it, too, okay?
Well, with that Eric Altman, I think that's probably the case with him. But it's just sort of like, dude, get your head out your ass. You know what I mean?
I know. I know exactly what you're talking about. And the thing, what bugs me perhaps the most is there's we have watched for 8 long, literally tortured years, Sandra, this administration manipulate the media. There was another story that broke just the other day, and then I sat here, once again in front of the computer with my jaw hanging open, just catching flies, going, no, they did not just, no. But they did, and I gotta remember what it was. Some of this stuff all runs together after a while.
No, it is. It just becomes a huge blur, because
I've seen the cronyism on the other side. We all have, and it's disgusting. But the dirty little secret is that we've got it on our side too. And if you can somehow slide into a slot in that, that old parlor game of, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, and, somebody knows somebody who knows somebody who knows you, and somehow you make it up onto the A-list, well, my God, Muffy, we must give them $1 million.
Well, yeah, no, and it's just, it's amazing how everything is high school at every echelon at the end of the day. It's just more money and more power involved, but it's still the same backstabbing, you know, Lord of the Flies type of mentality.
What a beautiful analogy and image you've just laid on this whole thing. It's high school all the way to the... And half the time I feel like I've just had my head yanked out of the toilet from getting another damn swirly.
Yeah, or a wedgie. You know, it's that kind of... You know, it's those sort of parlor games. And it's just like, yo, dude, can you, like... You know, I don't know. I just, and I, that whole thing, you, the statement you made, it's just like, yeah, I have to agree. I can feel the frustration. It's just like, you got a lot of people there working tirelessly for your, you know, for the network to survive. And I, you know, I, for some reason, I always just keep waiting that someone's going to drop a half a mil on you, you know?
Yeah, I know. And the thing is, everybody listening to this program, if they had it, would.
Would, that, yeah.
I mean, I've seen amazing, miraculous things happen with contributors over the, and every month when it looks like we're not even going to make the, you know, even make the internet bill.
Yeah.
Something will happen, and we'll go another month. But
it's just not, it's a real sort of precarious way to be trying to run a business, you know? Please.
Precarious. Oh, Lord. Yeah.
I don't know. I just, yeah. God, it's just, of course, when this election happened, you know, it's all the good feelings. You just wanted to sort of translate into positive action, which would be to support internet radio, for one thing. You know what I mean?
Yes. Support.
I'm not looking, you know, obviously getting involved with, you know, getting funding is always tricky because you don't want to be beholden. I understand. You know what I mean?
But, right. I mean, as tough as it is, if Massey Energy walks up tomorrow and says, you know, Bob, we're behind you, buddy. Now, granted, it ain't going to happen.
But no, but obviously you would say no because you have some integrity.
Can't do it.
You know, you can't do it. And it's just sort of your listeners, me being one of them, wouldn't be happy to hear something like that.
You'd walk away.
Because it's just too much. You know, obviously you wouldn't be doing it, so it's not even worth discussing. But, you know.
But there are other manifestations of that, Sandra, that I do have to sit around and think about. And part of the problem with all of this is that everybody on our side who has the bucks wants those bucks to come with strings that are actually hemp woven ropes, anchor chains from the 19th century.
Well, no, exactly. I mean, it's just, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's the same sort of power dynamics anytime people turn over some money. I mean, it's a cliche, but there's no such thing as a free lunch, and that's always the case.
No, and just, you know, just as a word to the wise, Sandra, not that, and probably most people have already figured this out, when you hear a whole bunch of high-toned or political types showing up on programs, whether the host means to or not, there is a likelihood that somewhere down the road, a degree of self-censorship will enter into the equation.
You're not going to... are you talking about the Ed Schultz syndrome?
Well, you said it, didn't you? I didn't. Hey, look, everybody! I've got access!
God, you know, I mean, that's patently transparent. And really, I don't mean to be bitchy, because it's like, whatever, more power to him, and... You know, his view isn't rushed, so at least it's a step up. I do mean step, though, you understand?
Yes, I do know exactly what you mean.
But, you know, that's my little bitch for the minute coming out. But
Well, how far into the paper are you?
Oh, I'm on page one.
Due tomorrow?
No.
Okay, yeah, okay. You're not nearly as bad as me, Sandra.
No, but I only have a couple of days.
Somebody's gonna and see, that's the thing. You said it doesn't get any easier as you get older. Those all-nighters that you could pull when you were 19 and 20 and 25 and stuff, they're a lot harder when you get a little older.
Oh no, I did one of those recently, and it just took a while to recover. Oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, I had to laugh at myself. I said, damn, you're fucking old, man.
Yeah, and you hate that reminder, too.
Yeah, but anyway, you know, it's all
a good. Oh, the election night coverage that we did when we were up till, I think I went to bed at 5 o'clock on the morning of November the 5th.
Shut up. Oh, I bet you was towed back.
I didn't even know what city I was in.
That's what I'm saying. Yes. Well, listen, that's a good cause. That's a good, you know, that's a good cause, but procrastinating a paper ain't. That's just dumb.
Yeah, but some of us can't work any other way, Sandra.
Oh, yeah, I know, but you know, I don't know. Sometimes I think that's a problem with the left, too. You know, we're also kind of head in the clouds, and, you know, you're scrambling at the end, you know?
Well, okay, you want to know how bad it is? I'll tell you how bad it is, and this is just a really tiny example. Of course, you know, my undergraduate degree is in English.
Oh, right, okay, so you've been writing all the time.
And what was worse is I focused on poetry more than prose.
Oh, wow.
I don't have the patience to write long prose, and I just worship at the shrine of anybody who can. Because there's too much stuff in my head to just keep it all strung out. But anyway, so last night on the program, I shared this little missive that I fired off to the local newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a long thing. I think the word count came out at 281.
Okay, that's just a page, yep.
Yeah, it started out at 475.
Okay.
And then there were, just for a little letter to the editor, there was about 2.5 hours of editing in it. Because, if it's my words and it's going out over my name, it's going to be exactly, by God, what I mean for it to say.
Oh, yeah, and you don't want it to be bogged down by, you know, idiotic mistakes. I'm with you on that because I have a hard enough time coming up with, you know, the ideas. I certainly want them to be appreciated without syntax errors, you know. I understand.
Yeah,
you know,
because
want your stuff to
my life is stream of consciousness enough, and I don't want to be sending out no damn paragraph from Faulkner when it does go out. You know, he hit the ball, then he hit the ball again, and I was looking at the grass. No.
Right.
So I understand exactly what you're going through, but I also have great faith that it'll come out beautifully. How far along is, so this is end of semester stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I know.
It's like hitting yourself in the head with a hammer, Sandra. It feels so good when you stop.
Well, yeah, you know, and also, I'm always careful about the bitching and moaning because, listen, in the big picture of things, a paper ain't nothing compared to some of the shit I've been through, so it's all good, you
perspective,
know.
Perspective.
You know, I tell that to some of the youngins I deal with. I'm like, listen, just chill because it ain't going to get any better once you're done. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah, that's where you get to look at them and say, now listen, kid, if this is as bad as it gets and you make it to 310, you've had a sweet ride.
Yeah. So, but, you know, also you were mentioning the mountaintop removal. You know, I heard, I don't know if you heard, you know about that Peter B. Collins, that
oh, sure,
guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's on that new station in Boston, which is 50,000 watts, and he's talking about that issue.
Holy cow, congratulations to Peter B.
Yeah, that's like, I guess they finally got progressive in Boston, but it's on one of those 50,000 watt deals.
Well, that's what's got to start happening because the right wing's forever saying, well, you know, liberal radio can't succeed. Well, it's because liberal radio goes uphill with its foot in a bucket. You can't succeed.
No.
You can't compete against 50,000 watts with 500.
Right. So this station, and it isn't sort of, you know, it's an independent, I guess they're going to get different programming, whatever, but it is a more of a progressive tilt. So I don't know. More power to them.
Amen to that. And Lottie in the chat room's up in the Boston area, so I bet he'll even know what station it is.
Yeah, I can't remember what station, but the main point was that he was talking about that very issue with the Bank of America thing. So you're right. That issue is starting to fan out, and it has to come to an end. I mean, talking about toxic and such a corrosive practice, I can't even wrap my head around it.
No, it's astonishing when you actually learn the data that's behind it. And frankly, I'm behind the curve on the data. Some of those folks down at Coal River Mountain Watch can cite chapter and verse and parts per million, and it'll make your eyeballs roll back in your head when you realize
what's
being done.
I just, you know, just as a layperson, I'm just sort of, you know, boggled by the obvious poisoning that must be going on of people and animals. No?
Right. Yeah. Well, I was told the other night that deer and turkey simply love to frolic on mountaintop removal reclamation sites. And everybody in the room just looked at the guy like he, you know, any minute he was going to be carted out with a straitjacket on and a purple crayon between his toes.
Well, no, but isn't the Bush administration trying to make it so they can just drop that crap anywhere? Even make
they just did, Sandra. Not trying to. They done did.
Okay, so is that regulation something that can be executive ordered away or what?
It's... I've seen a little bit of discussion and debate on this topic. A while back, I noted this. Someone had identified a regulation that said that the Senate and the House, on strictly a pure majority vote, no supermajorities, no filibusters allowed, can go back and review any administrative reg entered in, what, the last 60 days of a term.
Because he's also doing all these other sort of horrific work site rollbacks of, you know, poisons.
Oh, look, George Bush signed an order the other day that removed collective bargaining rights of people in the federal government who already had them and were members of a union.
Well, that can't stand.
You'd like to think, but if it can't stand, then why are they doing it?
Yeah, no, I mean, well, no, I just am, yeah, I just don't, I don't really understand. It's like, enough with the Obama appointments. Can we please focus on this idiot who's completing the destruction on his way out? My God. Have you seen that idiot in his interviews lately?
Yes, I have. I said last night that our buddy David in Tennessee had referred to him as a pitiful, rusted damn hood ornament.
Shut up.
Yeah. And it was that shriveled little man.
He's a horror show. God, Lord, you know?
Well, I swear, you know, that story came out, what, Sandra, a week ago when he was down somewhere off junketing or meeting or summitizing?
Drinking.
Yeah, and it was called a pisco sour.
Yeah, that would be Peruvian.
Yeah, and I'm, well, you know, because I'm interested in potables, shall we say, I'm just itching to know what a pisco sour is.
No, listen, it's some sort of weird fermented, you know, it sounds, I can't remember the whole makeup, but it sounded really interesting, you know, it's kind of a national drink, like home brew, you know, home brew.
Bring it on.
Home brews that never taste good, but that sounded...
Hey, now you just wait a minute. I have made some magnificent home brew.
I ain't had one yet that didn't taste like some... Mm, but I take your word for it.
Don't make me have to reopen the hobby just for you, Sandra.
Oh, no. No, but you know, it's always like, oh, you have this taste, this is great, and then it's like,
Pit. Yeah, but no, I mean, that Charlie Gibson thing, he looked wasted, Sandra.
He looked tore up. I was like, hello.
I mean, he was like, you know, one degree of inclination away from landing on the pretzel again.
No, but, you know, the thing that was killing me was the, when he was being asked about, you know, the comment, did you ever think you might see a Nig Nog and like that? God damn, no! You know? I was like, the way he answered it, oh, heavens, never thought, you know, I thought he was going to say, never thought we'd see some niggas up in here.
Jesus, Sandra. You're killing me. Oh, God. I think at the end of the day, Americans decided they wanted him in their living room for the next 4 years. Don't you love the imagery?
Yeah, no, the whole thing was so suspect, you know, with Bush. It was like, listen, fool, you treading close to showing your realness, you know what I mean?
And that whole Xanax thing going on. and Pickles sitting next to him. Did you notice she was sort of, she was listening a little bit to Port, leaning away from him on the couch like the fumes were getting her?
Yeah, no, it's like Mayflower, here I come, right after this. Yeah.
We're moving to Dallas. We ain't going to live in that god-awful little chunk of miserable desert no more. We're moving to Dallas. We're going to civilization.
God, that horrible, well, speaking of that fiend that gave birth to him, her problems, I was hoping that it would expire.
She went in for surgery on an ulcer. Bullshit. She went in to have that thing from Alien pulled out of her gut. You know, the one that pops out in the first movie and goes, and then flies off?
The one that pops out of that dude's chest?
Yeah, that one. She got one of those.
Shut up. That's hideous. You know what I was rolling when Mike was talking about, all the blood is missing in the hospital? Because
she brought a straw.
Is a vampire. I mean, I can't stand that woman. And I forget that she's around. Aren't they in their 80s already?
Yeah, well into them.
Damn.
But, you know, only the good die young.
Yeah, anyway, so, you know, but he just, I hope we don't, are we going to see more interviews as he...
Yes, this was the first in what is being described as a series of exit interviews. You know, enough with the interviews, just exit.
No, it's just, he's awful and, you know, all of them are awful. I think it's quite interesting, though, that Dick Cheney has shifted all his finances into European concerns, if you get my drift.
Yes, yes. And into the money belt and
95%.
Little numbered accounts in places like Zurich.
Yeah, him and Alan Greenspan's another one that shifted a lot of his personal monies to different, you know, I guess they know a lot more than we do, but not much. You
look, nobody wants to be in the dollar right now because one false move and China calls all the hot paper.
Not only that, but I read a report from the UN. I mean, obviously it's a report and maybe policies might change it, but they're suggesting that the dollar is going to have some horrific hard landing next year, i.e. Argentina type, where we're going to get poor really quickly.
Yes. I've read
poor, but you understand. I mean, macroly speaking.
Yeah, and the thing is, that's part and parcel of what I was saying a little bit ago. There's no way to predict what's going to happen, and the thing is, everybody got sucked into the market. You know, it's not a free market if everyone gets driven into it, Sandra. And so whether it's a granting institution or a foundation or a company, everybody, some way or another, the market is into everybody's pocket. And that's what makes, you know, what happened with the Wall Street bailout compared to what's happening with the Detroit bailout that they say they don't have the votes for now. So starkly hideous.
Well, no, listen, that was the main reason why I wanted to call you, actually. I am just so appalled by the stupidity of, like, I think it's 61% of the American people are saying no. Who cares about the executives? That's a distraction. Are they really prepared to throw a major industry like that away? That's like a national security issue.
Yeah, are you ready to watch the ripple effect from the unemployment of 3 million people?
That's what I'm saying. That literally is a national security concern. We're not talking about... I don't really know. I don't understand the mentality that's going on because you can be upset about the bailouts. I am. I think GM and all those, you know, they squandered a lot. But let's be real about what's going on here. We're talking about a part of the economy where things actually are made. Hello. Not made up. God damn, you know?
Well, look, the Michael Moore, in his appearance on Olbermann, I guess, last night, made an abundance of sense.
But didn't he say to just nationalize the whole thing and turn it into this green developing entity, right?
Well, yeah. What he said on Olbermann was to take the automakers and do what FDR did with them. Say, you're not making cars anymore now, you know, because FDR said now you're making planes and tanks and ships and jeeps because there's a national emergency.
Yeah, and it's a good idea to do that for the green technology that's just in a closet. Somewhere.
Right, and the fact is, as Michael Moore pointed out, the entire portfolio of all the shares of common stock of the big three are $11 billion. We could buy it for less than we could bail it out.
That's a shame.
Buy it, and as the shareholders, tell them what to do. Now, that's not socialism. That's not nationalizing it. That nationalizing it is more in the lines of, well, you know, just taking it over. We're buying it. We'll buy at market price. Because this really is an emergency.
Well, no, which begs the next question. You know, what is, the real agenda, obviously, seems to be, well, let's just crush this last union. And, you know, but it doesn't make any sense because you can't have people buy your junk if they don't have any money, right?
I don't know how.
I mean, I'm just saying, it's like, it don't make no sense for, you know, Obama should be on the internet or wherever the hell he is every day talking about how we can use this to start the green economy that he keeps going on about, right?
Well, exactly, because the other talking points are already out there from the right wing, Sandra. Well, you know, there's no data to suggest that Americans will buy hybrid automobiles. Well, you know why that data's not out there? At least as far as the American car manufacturers are concerned? Because they've barely started building them.
No, but see, we're getting to a point where choice is a luxury. You understand what I'm saying by that in this country? This isn't. You know, things are pretty bad, in case the right wing hadn't noticed. Can I say 40,000 people picking some damn fruit?
Yeah.
Vegetables?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yes.
Listen.
Look, and you say choice is going away. That has to be said within the context of the so-called free market, which ain't. Because it's something that's on the top of my tiny little mind. Look at what choice do you have? What choice does a young mother have in purchasing infant formula for her baby? Well, I can tell you this much. You can take a can of dry baby formula from Kroger, a can of dry baby formula from Foodland or Safeway or wherever, and a can of dry baby formula from Walmart, and they all have different labels on them. They all have different brand names, you know, in-store brands. And they've all got an 800 number on them for, you know, consumer questions or whatever. Well, if you call that, if you pay attention, you'll note that the 800 number on all three of those supposedly differently branded cans is the same damn number.
And it's going to where? Beijing?
Well, no, the one I called, because we got grandbabies in the house, the one I called went to Vermont.
Mm.
But then I went through the... I sort of drilled down through the BS a little ways, and the next thing I find out is that they cannot guarantee, and this was 2 months ago. This was long before Nestle came out with its revelation about melamine in its products.
Nestle, just that in itself, yeah.
Right. Well, Nestle, and then through, it was the Associated Press that did this work, through the Freedom of Information Act, Sandra, they find out that, what is it, SmithKline or whoever, Abbott Lab, I don't know. But one of the other major manufacturers of formula said, yeah, there's probably some melamine in ours too.
Oh, okay. So unlike the contaminated pet stuff, we ain't hearing about this 24/7, right?
Right.
Wow, that's interesting.
And the thing is, they're all coming because, and wow, I don't even know if I can enunciate this, Sandra. But this is a supposedly free capitalist market that is being supplied by what is titularly referred to as a communist command economy. So you've got one factory that makes all the goop that goes into the various and sundry different companies' infant formula over here. You cannot buy a can of infant formula, Sandra, that says made entirely of componentry inside the United States.
Yeah, oh, yeah, no, it's like that heparin, you know, the blood thinner.
Sure.
Remember that? That's the same kind of thing. all those, I mean, there's thousands of babies in China that are, like, at risk, not just a few hundreds that were sick, apparently.
And then the story from, I guess, early November, that there it was a salmon, get this, a salmonella alert over dog food, and people were getting the salmonella?
Oh, what?
Yeah. And it turns out, because I see the headline, and, you make assumptions when you read a headline, and I thought, oh, my God, Granny's eating the dog food again. Holy crap, here we go. And then I read down through it, and no, that's not the case. Maybe some people are, we don't know. But the fact of the matter is, the salmonella poisoning on the dog food was a particularly virulent, weird little strain of salmonella that you can get from skin contact.
What?
Yeah. Not making this up. And I read for comprehension. I think I got this right.
Oh, God. That's, wow.
So you go to pour Fido's dry dog food out, and a couple spill out on the floor or whatever. And you pick it up, and maybe you rub your eye, and the next thing you know, you're in the damn hospital.
That you may or may not get treatment from if you don't have the right insurance.
Bingo.
I mean, yeah, no, all of it, the free market is, government picks winners and chooses all the time. I mean, winners and losers all the time. Look at this bailout situation.
And that's what, that's what makes the Detroit, and Michael Moore said it so very well. He said, the Wall Street bailout looked like a cigar bar smoker with everything but the photographer from Cigar Aficionado. Oh, what? You want $700 billion? Can't we make it $8? And then the guys from Detroit show up, and they're treated like crap. Not to say that they probably haven't earned some of it. But it's the snobbery. It's, Murphy, we must bail out Wall Street or we won't eat hummingbird tongue canapes anymore. What? They want to bail out in Detroit? My God, it's those people. They make things.
Well, no, but the thing, shooting yourself in the foot from the looks of it.
Yeah. Right. It's that 61% number that just.
Yeah, it's so bizarre. I guess that's, once again, that's, I guess, the propaganda.
Well, but then again, to be fair, Sandra, what do you want after 28 years, for the most part, or a little bit longer even, of the right wing screaming that the way to be a good American is to say, I've got mine, you get yours, if you don't, screw you, let's sing the national anthem and then say the Pledge of Allegiance.
And if you are in trouble, go to your local box church and pray.
Yeah. What did Joe Hill write? Live on hay day by day. There'll be pie in the sky when you die.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that Grover Norquist and the whole right wing thug machine all sort of rolled conveniently tidily into one little knot?
Well, no. See, my biggest fear. Okay, next to this, them letting this industry go away is this, what's the name of the bill to make it easier to unionize?
Oh, the Employee Free Choice Act.
Yeah, we heard all this chit-chat during the campaign, but why do I get the feeling that that's not going to pass? Because these corporations are going to blow up before they allow something like that to happen,
Well,
unless we push, I just don't. I'm not faulting Obama. I know he said he supported it, but I don't know. I don't know if you've heard anything more about it. If it's
no, I've got the same sense of misgiving that you do, and my sense of misgiving doesn't come from Obama or from the House of Representatives. It comes from the Senate.
Yeah, and whatever cretin can try to put a hold on it, huh?
Yeah, but Wayne called in here last night, and I think he's got it nailed down to the wall. He said, "Remember the nuclear option? Remember how they beat us over the head with the nuclear option?" And Trent Lott was saying, "We'll take away your filibuster." Well, we've got more senators now than they had then. And the fact of the matter is, we've got to go in there on the Employee Free Choice Act, and the first time some Republican stands up, the next Democrat who stands up, you know, we don't talk about it, we don't put it out in the media, we don't have 4 weeks of for-profit only media hand-wringing about it. We don't give Robert Byrd the chance to go and form some gang of 14 mugwumps to protect the dignity of the Senate. The next Democrat just stands up and says, I move by majority vote to remove the right to filibuster and vote on the damn thing and look at the Republicans and say, we'll give it back when we're done getting done what has to be done. Piss off.
Yeah, no, but because this that piece of legislation is crucial to me. I think that that's...
It stands the chance, among other things, and with the exception of this program and this network, I seldom hear anybody talking about this. That piece of legislation can solve the health care crisis.
Well, yeah, and it's just sort of, it's just really important because we've had, you know, a generation of this, union busting and it's not a level playing field. And the only way it can be is to have access to forming unions, you know?
Yeah, well, let me share something with you if you've got just another minute or so, Sandra. I was over at Democratic Underground wandering around, and I found a post from a guy from Michigan, and this thing just blew my doors off. And it doesn't take long. He just said, I'm so damn sick of hearing I made $80 an hour. He said, I'm getting really tired of this meme. I heard a caller to CNN today saying auto workers need to take a 50% pay cut because they're making $80 an hour and watching machine work for them. Let me tell you some things. I worked at a Ford plant on an F-150 line from 2006 to 2007. I worked my ass off. I sweat in well over 100-degree heat. I bled from injuries. I had constant severe back pains and many other things. Every week the emergency bell went off in the plant and people were rushed to the hospital with serious injuries. I don't remember any machine doing any work for me at all. Those little video clips you see on the news are not the norm for auto plants any more than the images of Iraq on CNN are. They are sanitized images. And this is the kicker, Sandra. Oh, I made $14.84 an hour as well. They don't pay people $28 anymore unless you were working there since before the two-tiered wage structure was enacted. I also got almost no benefits. My medical insurance was ER only. No drug coverage, no office calls. I got sick last fall with a kidney infection and it cost me $4,000 even with my so-called insurance. I didn't get paid time off for being severely ill either. Mind you, and this is, oh Lord, I mean, just wait till this hits. Mind you, this is a UAW job with the big three. And he says, I'm so goddamn sick of being told I just made too much money and had it so good. Nobody would work like an animal like that for $14 an hour unless they had no choice, and people don't. He says, I was laid off at the end of this July. I have no job bank or any such another concession the union made for newer workers. I just collect unemployment and beg for fast food or retail jobs. And how's that for some reality?
But I'm not, you know, it's just sort of, yeah, of course that's the situation. I mean, I don't know. It's also disgusting, the whole dynamic with this the auto worker who gets paid too much. I mean, the fact that regular people actually believe that $80 canard is just,
Well, let's back up just a hair. What the hell is paid too much? What does that mean in the working class?
Oh, please. Not only that, but it means that there's some people who don't deserve to make money, and all them people who are just sitting around in pools collecting whatever, it's okay. When are those people going to be stigmatized?
Right, but that's why that $80 an hour thing is out there, because some guy who makes 45 an hour, and I don't know who those people are either, okay, is saying, well, damn, he's making 40. I work harder than him. It's class warfare. It really is class warfare. And as usual, the other side's the one doing all the shooting, and we're being accused of all the wrongdoing.
Well, no, and they're just laughing. You know what I mean? They're laughing at fomenting that sort of stuff where, you know, you get some idiot who's making $10 an hour bitching about a union worker as if it's impacting them negatively when it's the other goddamn way around.
Well, that's the whole Joe the Plumber stupidity. I mean, isn't that where that came from?
Oh, no, but it's just sort of like, yo, if you didn't have even the bit of unionization that we got, you'd be working 14 hours a day along with your fucking kid next to you. Right?
Yeah. And it just slays me. Because, that guy making $10 an hour, if he has the Employee Free Choice Act, he might make a little bit more, and he might get some health care.
No, yeah, it's just sort of, I don't even know what to think anymore, because we've been in this situation for almost three decades now. It's like, what is it going to take for people to say, okay, well, let's at least try something different, right?
Well, among other things, somewhere along the way, we're going to have the rise of some real union leadership. The Walter Reuthers, the Reuther brothers, the John L. Lewis's, the people who could, hell, the Jimmy Hoffa's, who can stand there and lay it out straight and lay it out plain.
Well, no, I can't deal with that guy who's the head. What is his name? He's the head of the hotel workers union.
Oh, Andy Stern.
Yeah, he seems to be more concerned about the corporations that he's dealing with than his.
Well, that's the rap on Andy Stern is that he would gladly have a union that's run by the corporation as long as it's a union, or as long as it's a dues paying union. And I don't necessarily know that that's an unfair rap on him.
Well, no, I'm just saying, I understand that he's, made some inroads. It's just, it doesn't seem to be, there's something that's not legitimate about, dude. I don't know where to put.
Well, the whole thing, he's the one who created that so-called Change to Win coalition that was a function of a split off from the, AFL-CIO.
Yeah.
And you see, John Sweeney, who is the president of the AFL-CIO, was Andy Stern's mentor. And it was a philosophical difference between Andy Stern and John Sweeney that caused that rift. And early on, it was described as being a split created by Sweeney's wanting to take the same old labor approach to political influence, where Andy Stern wanted to invent a new paradigm. But by the same token, Stern does go around and he sits down with corporate boards and he hobnobs and rubs shoulders and elbows and whatnot. And he has gotten, rightly or wrongly, I'm not endorsing one side or the other, but he's gotten a bit of the rap for being just a little too cozy.
Right. Yeah. And of course, the reason why I'm just hesitant is because, I don't want to knock dude, because I know, it's not easy what he's trying to do. I just, my idea of union is still a bit adversarial. I'm sorry. That's just sort of,
Well, I don't think that's necessarily your idea. That's sort of the nature of the process, at least as it developed in Western Europe and the United States.
Right. And so when I see the supposed leader of the actual workers, in that situation, it's just sort of, I don't know, unless the workers are getting, raises all the time and benefits and, concessions, I don't see that happening, right?
Well, living wage is the watchword. And I got to give it to the SEIU that they've organized some places that you would not expect organizing to be successful, and they have transformed people's lives for the good.
Yeah, which means they've added $4 or $5 to people's wages, right?
Yeah, or made some guy or some single mother's child able to go to college.
Yeah,
sure.
That's what I'm saying. So I mean, there are some real benefits going on with him. So that's what I mean. I don't really want to give a big rap. I just sort of, what you were saying about the leadership of unions, I think that, we could stand to have a little bit more fire at this point, because, it's in trouble. We're not sort of coasting along, circa 53, what I mean?
Right. No, the economy is doing anything but banging on all eight.
Yeah, so, but, yeah, anyway, well, I should let you go.
Well, I tell you what, you're gonna think I'm crazy, but I was thinking about you about a day ago.
Ah, well.
So, I conjured you.
You did.
My bad. I hope I didn't take away too much time from the paper.
Oh, please. You know what? No problem.
Yeah, because when you're in the middle of one of those things, you can justify doing the dishes, washing the walls, anything to get away from that little monster on the word processor that is staring you down.
Exactly. You know, I always like to call you in, so that's not really an excuse.
Well, Sandra, you take care, and we'll keep our fingers crossed for a really embarrassingly good grade.
Yep. Oh, thanks. Bye.
Bye now. Our pal Sandra calling from California. This is, wow, how many places did we just go? And it all ties together. That's you know, so much of what we talk about when we talk about what it means to have liberal conversation radio. Did you hear any marching orders in that? Did you hear any talking points? No. Because we're liberals. We are progressive people. And we don't work that way. We play freely in the marketplace of ideas. And that's a beautiful thing. It just doesn't work for the right-wingers because their people have to be told where to go, what to do, and when to do it. Oh, and by the way, the little correction. Our pal Marty says, actually, Darth Cheney shifted the money to Dubai. And then this inquiry. Oh, God, I love you guys. You don't miss anything. Remember where Halliburton relocated to? Yeah, same place. On the issue of the Pisco Sour. The Pisco Sour it's apparently got a rather fascinating little history. This is what the dim leader was sucking on a week or so ago. And it is, according to the whoever wrote this at Wikipedia, a cocktail containing pisco, which is a regional brandy, lemon juice, egg whites, simple syrup, and regional bitters. By God, that sounds good. The national origin of the Pisco Sour is debated, if from Chile or Peru. In Peru, the variety of lemon used has a flavor similar to key lime. As a result, some of the recipes call for the use of key lime juice rather than lemon juice. And in the U.S., it's usually made with commonly available Lisbon or Eureka lemons. Okay. And apparently the origins reach back into the 16th century, Spanish colonial rule of the New World down the Pacific coast of South America. And it has reached all the way into the 21st century, where George Bush, who said he got on the wagon and found Jesus at the tender age of 40, and did that whole thing where you reach in and take the pint bottle with the curve in the back that sort of fits against your butt in your hip pocket, took it out, looked at it, and threw it over his shoulder and never touched another drop. Bullshit, he said to Robin, and he turned and walked away. Never touched a drop. He's wasted. He's tanked. He's in the bag. And that lean away thing that Pickles was doing? She was either trying to get out of the fumes or manifest her disgust for him. Hey, you remember when the Clintons left office and all of the for-profit media and the right-wing hate radio and, you know, all those filth merchants? Well, now, obviously, the Clintons will have to get a divorce. Not so much. On the other hand, remember, we believed the National Enquirer when the National Enquirer started dropping tales about, oh, John Edwards. The National Enquirer also didn't hesitate to publish stories of Laura Dimebag Bush moving out of the White House and moving into the Mayflower Hotel. You tell me. Would you believe it? I'm inclined to believe it. And with that plastered on porcelain death mask with that blood red lipstick she had on, I don't think things are happy at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue up there in the up there in the residence. And speaking of Peru, I had, well, you know, News Ninja Gene, who reads the entire internet every morning before breakfast, sent me this brilliant article about the discovery of a new old ruin in Peru. Never seen by Western European people before. And it was a settlement literally on the high in the mountains and on the lip of a deep abyss. And it belonged to the Chachapoyas people, who were subjugated by the Inca about 1470 or so. And I read those things and my heart just beats a little faster. Because there are still so many things for us to learn outside that which was not destroyed. I also had a link to a story of a particular Roman Catholic priest who went on a personal crusade to destroy the entire written language of the Maya people when he found them. Of course, the Maya civilization, at least on its grand scale, had largely disappeared, but people still could read the writing. And he held his own personal inquisition and destroyed every last piece of written language he could get his hands on. And in the 20th century, it took a team of about 200 people working tirelessly on it to restore the language. Isn't it beautiful what people can do when they decide that something is important? And frankly, it's obvious that you and I, we recognize the importance of talking about the right way to fix our country. And, well, among other things, not leaving 2 or 3 million working Americans hanging out, flapping in the free market breeze. Can you imagine? What in the hell is wrong that the votes aren't there in the Senate? What in the hell's wrong with the Senate? Just asking. It's a Democratic majority, even if it's a majority of one right now. It gets better in January. But the Democratic majority can't put together the votes to stand behind 2 or 3 million working Americans? What? Oh, they mean there's not 60 votes, don't they? Well, because the Republicans are going to fight to the last bitter tear. And they'll stop anything that does any good for anybody who works for a living in this country. And suddenly what Wayne said last night on the program makes abundantly more sense. Nuclear option. You know, I hate that term, but that's what it's called. Take away the little bastard's right to filibuster and put it back when we're done fixing things. You know, I suggested last night that we not even give them a chance to bitch about it. That we do it, and no questions asked, and then pass the legislation. What would you do? Would you give the right-wing minority in the Senate one last chance? Would you say, here, we're going to do this if you don't let this legislation through on an up or down vote? Remember that? All we want is an up or down vote. That's all we want. It's just American to have ups and downs votes. I remember that very, very well. Because that had to do not with the rights of working people, not directly. That had to do with the right-wing imperative to cram filthy little right-wing ideologues down the throat of the American judiciary and down the throat of the American people. Blech. And then we had the whole Gang of 14, all Blanche Lincoln, David Pryor, Mary Landrieu, Joe Lieberman, the Robert Byrd, 7 and 7. Weren't it, yeah, and Lindsey Graham and John McCain. Weren't they part of that process as well? We can't let one of those things have time to fester and blow up and fill with pus this time through. The Employee Free Choice Act is quite simply the single most important piece of legislation that has been pending in quite some time, that has had a remote chance of passage. If I was to take two pieces of legislation, and you're free to differ with me on this, of course, but if I was to take two pieces of legislation and say that this country changes dramatically and for the better with its passage, those two pieces of legislation are the Employee Free Choice Act and the Clean Water Protection Act. Nothing will transform this country faster than those two pieces of legislation. And frankly, they should be gone after. They should be gone after hammer and tongs as a matter of the first pieces of business of the new Congress. We're in a place where we can't afford to let them screw up anymore. We cannot take one step forward and two steps back, marching to the twisted, off-kilter drumbeat of the Republican Party anymore. News Ninja Gene chimes in and says, give the retardlicans a chance to screw it up. Oh, no. Oh, no. I edited it a little bit. I'm trying to cut down on the F words in the program, but F no. F no. So just spring it on them. Just spring it on them and then watch them stand and squeal and scream and cry. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Hey, Brother Luke, what's up?
I tell you what, it's turning into a fun one sitting watching some of this stuff. You saw, I sent you the thing, I think, earlier today, the thing about where some of them are actually saying that Matthews actually thinks he's going to run for the Senate.
Yes, I saw that.
And I was sitting there going, please run for the Senate, please, just so I don't have to listen to you every night. Just go away. Oh, have you been watching, if you watch him lately, I'm just curious what drugs he takes to get him to that level of paranoia. Because every night so far this week I've watched, it's because they milk it, is how that, oh, by the way, this is all Hillary's plan to take over. I mean, the level of paranoia, he must be doing some great drugs. He must be doing blocks of crack. I don't know how you can get that crazy.
Yeah, without help. And lighten it with a propane cutting torch or something, a ceiling torch? Sure, yeah.
But you know what I mean? It's the same thing on all of them. It's like, isn't it amazing how everything this time this year, every time they've said she's doing something to screw it up, she isn't. They just all have been wrong again and again and again. I think I said to the thing where I said they're batting as usual, 0-0-0. You know, it's like, you know.
The Clinton drama syndrome?
Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, it's like, guys, you've milked this for 18 years now. Give it up. It's over. I mean, okay, she's Secretary of State, but you know, I mean, it's like. Oh, I tell you what, it's got to the point with that. I'm just to the point. It's like, I just don't want to watch it anymore. You know, any of it. It's like the minute they come on, it's like, change the channel. Don't even want to see it anymore.
You know, I got that way long before the cable company sort of screwed us over here yeah. And took away MSNBC. I regret the fact that I can't watch Olbermann or Rachel Maddow live.
Yeah.
But long, long ago, click.
Yep.
Yeah, and, you know, the sad. I can't stand to even let the image of Wolf Blitzer pass through my neurons. I can't do it.
It's got to the point now. Like I said, the only reason I don't turn it on anymore is just to see who he might have on as a guest. And that's, you know, and that's just, you know, standing it just so I can listen to the somebody he might have on I really want to hear. But other than that, it's like, say, if I, you know, it's why I call you about this time. It's like, I have no interest in listening to him. You know what I mean? It's like, so what? You know, and if I want to listen to Cafferty's questions, I can always wait the next day and look on the blog and read that. That's about the only reason I ever listen to Wolf anymore, because Wolf is like headline news. He just keeps repeating the same five stories or so. It's like, Wolf, something else. I don't
tell somebody to go play with the magic map or something. Yeah. It's like some sort of political romper room, and call up the doobie.
Well, you know what, the one that's going to be fun tonight is, you know, tonight is the night Baba Wawa has her 10 interesting people.
Oh, God, this is it?
Yep. And we could sit and watch her, how she thinks the drug dealer is an interesting person.
And, yeah, and me, I was going to say, and me without my absinthe.
Yeah. It's like, say, it's one of those things, it's like, you know, maybe we should all go paint a room and stand in the room while just smelling the fumes, then come out and watch it. It could be fun. You know? Oh, what's got me lately on the media that I love is, isn't it amazing how everybody is so damn concerned about this thing with, was it Burris? Something?
Yeah, Plaxico Burris.
Plaxico Burris. It's amazing how that, you know, somebody today compared it and they said, isn't it amazing how they're so the press is so gung-ho on this when we had a vice president who shot a man in the face, and they said, it's okay that they waited 48 hours to give him a blood alcohol test.
Yeah, but Plaxico Burris is a mad criminal.
It's like a mad criminal who managed to shoot himself. It's like,
Well, that's that's the thing. If he had just shot somebody in the face and been a Republican and...
Could have said, I could have sworn it was a quail. You know, he jumped up there and just made that same sound. I had to shoot. You know?
Don't talk about shooting and quail in the same sentence, Luke. The guys with the black suits and the skinny black ties and utterly humorless attitudes will be wanting to talk to you.
I know. It's one of those things. Because
that dummy's still... That, we're still paying for that dummy's protection.
That's true. We're still paying for that dummy's retirement. That's like even worse.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, he's double-dipping. I mean, you do realize that, right?
Yeah, one is a senator, one is a VP.
Well, yeah, he's got his... No. Not just that. He's got a senator's retirement. Uh-huh. He's got... We're talking about Dan Quayle here. He's got a senator's retirement, a vice president's retirement, and he's got a cushy job in a corner office for Cerberus Holdings, which owns Chrysler.
Oh, God. Oh, well. Oh! Meant to tell you, did you see the thing I sent you, the thing from ESPN?
Yes, I did.
That's a class way to go out. That was a good story.
Well,
it was Color Phil's last day.
Yeah, and how are you feeling about the Lane Kiffin hire?
We'll wait and see on it. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. We'll wait. Like I say, we're waiting. You know, have to wait till the end of the season to see if Daddy, which we know is coming. And his brother-in-law, and I think a cousin or two.
I guess Ed Orgeron's still in the mix?
They're talking like he is, but I don't see how you're going to have both of them. How you're going to get Monty Kiffin and Ed Orgeron on the same group. You know what I mean? It's people haven't really started asking the finances, you know, a lot yet, because there are a lot of questions about this. I mean, you're paying Kiffin too. You got to figure Monty's making more than that now.
But you want to talk about money and stupid in the same sentence? Let's travel down to the plains. Let's go to Toomer's Corner at Auburn.
Tuberville strikes again. Yes, indeed.
$6 million payoff, and now the AD and the president of Auburn University are coming out and saying, we begged him to stay. We just begged him. Yeah. Sure you did.
Well, you know the one that blows our mind is last year they had a chance, and we don't know what they would have had to make him, but they could have made him offensive coordinator. Last year we could have had Trooper Taylor, who was our running backs coach.
Yeah.
Could have been your offensive coordinator, and he would have had a good shot at being our coach. But they let him get away, and he went to Oklahoma State.
You know who's still out there that I think will make a pretty decent head coach someday? I mean, he's already a head coach, but at a fairly big time school is Turner Gill up at Buffalo.
Oh, yeah. You know,
because lowly Buffalo, and they're going, they've got a chance at a bowl game?
I know. Well, you did know there's a game on tonight. Not me to try to get people to change channels, but Louisville's playing Rutgers tonight. I went there.
Oh, so they are. Yeah. So they, because, in Morgantown, we will put the final punctuation on the season of, the squandered season. That's what I'm calling it. The squandered season on Saturday when University of South Florida comes to Morgantown.
Oh no, the one that I love this past weekend that no one talks a whole lot about, and of course they aren't bringing it up a whole lot on Sports South, the Comcast Sports South, is isn't it amazing how the first year we were talking about an SEC team going undefeated? Unfortunately, they were talking the first year about a team called Georgia.
Yeah, they kind of were, weren't they?
And poor old Georgia let Georgia Tech beat them. Oh, this, you know.
Well, but I got to tell you, my biases come into stark relief and full steam when you start talking about the Bulldogs. Not because I have any particular animus against the University of Georgia, but Mark Richt is such a sickening little fundy, Luke, that I just can't watch that man lose enough games.
It's one of those things, you know, it's like, say, we loved it the last couple, not this past year, but, the, you know, the last couple of years, we beat the tar out of them.
Yeah.
We were just loving it, you know. I still love beating the tar out of them because they've always thought they should be the leader in the SEC East. It's like, well, see, you're in the SEC East with Tennessee and Florida. I don't think this is going to happen on too constant a basis.
Well, you know, talk about beating Georgia and enjoying it. There are homes all over the state of West Virginia that have, you know, those electronic picture frames.
Oh yeah,
they've got the three photographs of the beautiful little Georgia fan from two Sugar Bowls back in the stands when we were handing Georgia its rear end. This yours, and you can read her lips. Oh my God. I mean that's up on the wall in West Virginia now, next to the picture of John L. Lewis, John F. Kennedy, and Jesus Christ.
I understand, you know. It's
oh my God!
Well, but you know, have you noticed? We'll get back to politics. I know we're probably boring some people out with sports, but have you noticed though how so far? I don't know what you've been watching, but I'm still not seeing anybody, especially, you know, a whole lot of stack of people from the Center for American Progress or...
No, not really there. You know,
some of the other...
Media Matters and David Brock, who heads that outfit,
uh-huh.
Media Matters put out a blistering inquiry at NBC for...
General McCafferty?
Yeah, for continuing... to hustle Barry McCaffrey without disclosing his really rather unspeakably corrupt, can we use that word, corrupt conflicts of interest? And
yeah.
now lo and behold, it is nice to see some influence, some cause and effect going on. David Brock did that, and guess what happened today?
Uh-oh.
The Society of Professional Journalists called him on it.
Well, you saw. Oh, another thing for tonight, late tonight, is I saw that Mr. Gregory is going to be on the Leno show tonight. So,
heir apparent to meet
Tim Russert, apparently.
Yeah, to Press the Meat or Meet the Prostitutes, whatever. Yeah.
I agree. It's still Press the Meat, but you know, I still wish they'd have gone to a rotational system. I think they could have, you know, put two or three different people in there. It could have made it a whole lot better.
Well, for those of us who remember black and white television, Luke. I forget what the guy's name. It was one of the, he was a squirrely little guy with glasses, and he was a real journalist.
Oh, yeah.
I remember because as a child I was bored to tears by Press the Meat. But Lord knows my parents and grandmother just loved it. But there was a little guy there that, and somebody will probably tell me who it was soon.
I know. There was, I can see the face, but I can't think of the name.
Right, on the fuzzy black and white TV screen.
Uh-huh.
But he would have a couple of people around him, and they'd ask questions, too.
And these were, and like I say, this was back in the day before they had blow-dried people. So, you know, I mean, these were people who you could tell were journalists. Look for like Jack Drummond or somebody like that, you know.
Couple of rumples in the suit, and you could listen to the voices, and no, pretty sure that they knew the exact mark on the glass where the second finger of brown liquor wound up.
Yeah, I was one I always used to like to watch was I can't say his name right, Sander Van Oker.
Yeah,
he was one of them. You know, you could tell he was just an old print journalist who got shoved into TV because I guess that's what, you know, he knew that's the way life was going. And, you know, he, as I say, he wasn't going to win no beauty contest. He was there just to do the story.
Oh, and by the way, in response to your query about Plaxico Burress, Marty out in California just chimed in. He says, for your information, Plaxico Burress is also black. But I do wonder if the New York GOP will be receiving any new contributions with Mr. Burress's name on the checks.
But you know what I mean? That's just the silliness of it. You know what I mean? Here's a guy that shoots himself in the leg. Okay, you know, a stupid thing to do. But they're acting like he went out and gunned down a bus full of nuns.
Well, that's true. And just a little piece of detail here, kindly provided by your fellow Tennessean, David over there in Middle Tennessee. He said, in case you hadn't heard, as far as Plaxico's leg wound was concerned, it was a Glock. In the Smith & Wesson 40 caliber chambering. He said, and David said, knowing how you just love their safety system. You're familiar with the Glock so-called safety system, right?
Yeah.
It's the safety system that doesn't have a safety system.
Yeah. Their safety system is they hope it works, you know?
Well, yeah, it's really weird. I once almost bought one, but then went, no, because I'll shoot myself.
Uh-huh.
There's this little catch inside the, you know, there's the trigger guard and there's the trigger, and then the trigger has a little catch on it, and you have to squeeze it down, and then you squeeze the trigger.
Oh, God.
But being as it lays on the trigger, and the finger hits both of them, well.
It's like the old double trigger thing. It's like, well, if you twitch and pull one, you're probably going to pull the other two.
Right, or a set trigger, that kind of click and click. Right, right. And, well, things begin to make a whole lot more, but damn, that's gotta hurt.
Yeah.
But really, I mean, maybe my details are a little off, but he was living, I mean, he was in New York?
Yeah, apparently.
With said handgun?
Yeah. Which is a crime.
Right. And, tie the tourniquet and hobble over to the garbage chute real fast.
Well, no, apparently what he did was hand it to a friend saying, essentially, go hide this. So now they know who the friend is, so he's in trouble for taking the gun and going to hide it.
Welcome to secondary possession.
Yeah. It's like the old thing when you're committing the crime, the chain of evidence, congratulations.
Well, it's like Wayne said last night. I'm just so glad he's not playing for the Steelers doing this now. do you remember, speaking, okay, I'm not trying to heap insult on injury, but do you remember, or would you happen to know, the first play that involved Plaxico Burress when he was a rookie receiver with the Steelers?
No, not offhand. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, this is a beautiful thing. And okay. it sort of dovetails into why this is the guy, remember, this is the guy who shot himself in the leg with the Glock, the 40 caliber Smith & Wesson. Yeah, right. He goes, you know, he was a high round draft pick, real hot shot out of Michigan State. The Steelers drafted him, and he went down, and, you know, it was kind of, I don't know, I don't think it was a crossing route. It was more like a modified post or something like that. And, you know, tall guy, beautiful, supple hands, goes up, catches the ball, and falls down. Because it was an athletic catch.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't remember who the Steelers were playing, but there was nobody near him. This is the NFL, not college.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah,
this
so he catches the ball, falls down, stands up, sets the ball on the ground, and runs back to the huddle real proud-like.
I forgot about that. Oh. You know, it's like, this is cool.
And, you know, and I'm watching, you know, and I'm watching.
You, dummy.
Yeah, I'm watching ball on, pink, flabby me watching ball on the couch on a Sunday afternoon. And before, you know, I had no control over my internal monologue at that point, and I start screaming, ball, ball, ball.
Oh, let me get back to politics, and I'm sorry I have to do this.
That's okay.
Our time's almost up. Have you noticed how there's been absolutely nobody in the mainstream media? I wrote Kurtz a nice dirty note about it. Dirty, but
God bless you.
Well, it was sort of like about the thing. It's like, isn't it amazing how the last couple, he didn't do his weekly interview this week. Didn't do his online thing. But he's had a couple of his media notes, and I wrote him back on one of them, and I said, isn't it amazing how after 3-4 days we're still not hearing one word about the Charlie Gibson interview? You know, the revisionist world. It's like, isn't that amazing how much fun that is? It's like,
boop, boop.
You know,
yeah, crickets.
Yeah, it's sort of like W stands there and essentially says, well, they, you know, Saddam wouldn't let the inspectors in. I remember when that happened because they were showing the inspectors going in to two of the plants.
I know.
On the screen at the same time.
I know.
They're going, somebody say something.
Oh, and by the way, yes, your fellow Tennessean has chimed in. Lawrence Spivak. Spivak.
Spivak.
Spivak. Spivak.
That was it.
Yeah.
David,
I just remember those glasses.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, David can tell you one thing we're looking at down here. You do know that our state went over to the Republicans, now have the Speaker of the House.
Yes.
This past election. And we figure, like I say, 2 years, and we figure the Democrats will be back, because like I say, after 2 years, we figure the Republicans will screw it up so bad that they won't have to worry about it for a couple decades. We have faith in them. You know how it is? It's like I say, Republicans want to get in charge of government so they can prove government doesn't work.
And they will do
they're
it.
They're damn good at that.
Yeah. They'll have a royal flush. Yeah.
Oh, but well, you know how it is? It's like I say, the other one. Did you see the, I loved the one the other day, the Gene Lyons article. Did you see
I
that?
Just love reading Gene Lyons. What, why in the hell is he up there in the middle of nowhere?
Well, I assume that's just because he likes it, but I've never understood, you know, it's like, guys, we can do a remote. Why don't we have Gene on doing something on TV? Because people need to hear him. You know what I mean? But, you know, it's like we said, you know, it's the same thing with Press the Meat and all these others. You know, whoever they pick, you're going to get, it's like watching, I particularly don't mind her. I don't mind watching like Gwen Ifill on a Friday night on Washington Week, but I know who the guests are and I can almost tell you what the questions are. And it's like occasionally, I'd like to see somebody new. Can we have somebody, you know, somebody that we don't get to see on a regular basis?
Yeah, you know? Television does reach Arkansas.
I know. Yeah, amazingly enough. I started
reading Gene Lyons as a result of reading Bart Kopp, because Bart Kopp, although he is there in the knuckle drag Oklahoma, as he puts it, if I understand correctly, he's an old Arkansas boy.
Yeah.
And it was through him that I started reading Gene Lyons, and really one of the most astute political observers that there is out there to read.
And it's like I say, every Wednesday I go to the Northwest Arkansas Gazette and hunt him up. And he's on there, you know, on their
He really never fails to, he never disappoints. Never fails to come through.
He's had those ones where he got in there for a couple of minutes, okay. I mean, I'm allowing him to get off politics every once in a while, you burn out, where he was doing the thing about with the cattle.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You know, every once in a while you got to do something like that.
Hey, we got to talk college ball here once in a while, or my head will just explode. So I understand that completely.
Well, like I say, what do you think is going to happen Saturday in the Florida Alabama?
You know, what's the spread? What, 10 and a half points?
Everybody's picking Florida is going to do it, but it's like, well, then why is Alabama undefeated?
I know, but. I hate to sound like a Johnny Come Lately or anything, but I put some stock in Urban Meyer and that spread. Now it's come to my attention that two of their defensive front are out for the game.
Yep.
Percy, is like running on one leg. But this is SEC football, and anybody knows that you take those injury reports with a grain of salt, because, you know, I grew up watching Bear Bryant, and, you know, we're playing the Louisiana School for the Deaf, Blind, and Lame next week, and, well,
they're going to beat the tar out of them.
I don't know if we'll be able to stay on the football field. We're awful banged up from last week's game against the Kentucky School for the One-Legged, and I just don't know. I'm worried.
Sitting there after 5 or 6 years of watching either Kenny Stabler or Joe Namath, you're going, oh, God. poor old Bear, like I say, you know, most people think, you know, now that Lou Holtz had that. No, Lou learned that from Bear. You know, to come out and tell everybody that your team can't play, can't even walk down the field without falling down a lot.
Oh, I remember when Bama played Arkansas in a Sugar Bowl, I think it was. And Bear was still there, and Lou was at Arkansas, and they, you know, this was before it got all glitzy and glamorous, but they had somebody on the sideline who walked over to Lou Holtz and said, "What do you think of your chances tonight?" And he said, and, you know, God, I hate Lou Holtz.
Well, I figure if we get a first down, we'll just call time out and throw a little party.
It's like saying between the two of them at the same field, that had to be a hoot and a half. Oh,
well, that or anything involving Bear Bryant and Frank Broyles, you know.
Oh,
gone are the days, you know.
Well, like I say, sometimes you ever want fun, I may send you a DVD from when we played the Sugar Bowl against Miami in '85. The first quarter, you couldn't prove me there was a Tennessee player on the field if you listened to Frank Broyles. He wanted to tell you that Miami was going to be national champions if they won the game, because the other games had gone the wrong way. So he was saying, well, if Miami wins this big enough, you know, it's going to be hard to keep them out of the championship.
Oh, and that accent.
Oh, when he and Keith Jackson
worked together, it was absolutely a masterclass in beautiful Southern babble drawl kind of stuff. Yeah.
That's pretty much what you could call a Southern babble-icious. Yes,
yep.
It is.
Indeed.
I'll send you the one for the Miracle at South Bend.
Oh, that'd be, yeah.
Oh, that was a fun game.
Yeah, but no miracles this year.
Well, it was just so fun to watch Lou as his face kept falling and falling.
Yeah, but I tell you what, the Nostradamus had to pay money back to NBC this year.
I'm not kidding. I want somebody to really explain to me, though, how they keep that contract. I mean, who in their right mind keeps offering them the damn contract?
You know how it goes. It's probably more Opus Dei.
Well, it's like I say, I live for the end of the season when I can at least watch the Grambling game, Grambling and Southern play. That's a lot more entertaining.
You're darn right it is. But, you know, there's some NBC executive there with a little piece of barbed wire wrapped around his leg. And,
Well, I'll tell you what, but I'll be on long.
Right.
I know you got more.
Luke, it's been a lot of fun, and thanks for opening the college ball gate.
Okay, bud. We'll take it easy.
Bye now.
Bye.
In East Tennessee, our buddy Luke. Hey, welcome to the program.
It's all Tennessee all the time.
Welcome to Tennessee Radio.
And you guys said something about football, and I'm going to touch on football, but I'm going to do it quickly. And then I'm going to go to a point that will probably throw one or two, maybe three doors open for you. And I can just sit back and watch the fun, or listen to the fun. I'm not quite in the right state to be able to see radio fun. It's happened at times in the past, but not tonight.
Yeah, where you hear colors and see tastes and right.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, see music. All right, about a little over a year ago, football supporters at the University of Alabama pursued a whiz-bang coach. And there was somewhere between an $11 and $13 million set of expenditures to pay one off and buy a fresh set. The University of Tennessee just did the same thing about, 4 days ago, or commenced the process. And now our other brothers in Highway Orange down there on the plain, they're gonna shell out. I've heard it referred to. I heard it referred to as traffic cone orange, and I thought, yep, that's us. Anyway.
Sorry.
Lane marker.
That's orange. Okay. I still remember last year's Pitt game, David, when the Mountaineers took their home field wearing State Road yellow.
Oh, geez. Oh, the mustards. Nah, I hope they never wear the mustards again, ever. And just for your sake, I'm an innocent bystander. And all right, now then. Tennessee did it. Auburn signed up for the same damn process. So we're talking about round numbers altogether, somewhere between $32 and $38 million. to trade out football coaches so a bunch of broke dick boosters can go to the club and brag about what 19-year-old kid getting a bunch of fake scholarships to be an unpaid pro can do in behalf of the old alma mammy, as my daddy used to say.
Yep.
All right, now put that aside. I've painted this big, ugly picture of a steaming pile of...
Yep.
Every state in this part of the world has tax shortfalls. Tennessee, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, we're all looking at budgetary shortfalls that are frightening.
Epic.
So, epic indeed. So, where do we turn? Well, the first thing is that you can't cut back on the stuff that makes everybody happy, so cops and roads and all that sort of stuff, and you look around, and in the state of Tennessee, the biggest bullseye is on the state higher education system. Our universities that foster and create good thought, hopefully, and research and development, and
proud academic traditions.
And new, yes, and new ways to do old jobs better, and new ways to do new jobs, well, like maybe help a company that's moving to my part of the world that is one of America's, if not the leading manufacturer of solar panels in North America. You know, a little research pitched in on.
Don't those boys come from my neck of the woods, too?
They are headquartered in Muscle Shoals, Alabama.
What I thought.
Technologies. They were the company's less than 20 years old, and they were all jazzed about making auto parts, and when that slowed down 5 years ago, gee willikers, what did those enterprising folks do? They looked around at each other and said, well, let's make us something other than automobile parts. You're the first one to tell me the idea. Fred, what do you, all right, Ethel, what do you, are down the line, and somebody said solar panels, and now they're successful at solar panels. All right, now then, that is a generalization.
Yeah, that's one of those southern damn moments. Solar panels, damn.
Have you ever heard of Tennessee Tech in Cookeville, Tennessee?
I most assuredly have.
Got the ugliest colors on the planet. It's a washed out purple and a pissy looking yellow. Really solid school. Sits right next door. One of the reasons the Arnold Engineering Center, that's tied into NASA, tied into National Defense Work, one of the reasons it's there is that very quietly, Tennessee Tech is a fine engineering school that stresses the hard sciences. Now then, here comes the punchline. More words than usually a punchline has, but here we go. Three southern states in 1 year's time are going to fart away, round numbers, $35 million on the chance that some SOB can coach football better than the previous SOB, but the university system in the state of Tennessee has a large enough shortfall that if they put it all on one university, Tennessee Tech would close. 8,200 students would have to find another university, a university that's been turning out good engineers for nearly 100 years, would padlock the doors and tell these kids to make a rope wet from the bottom up. If Tennessee stopped red ink in their university system because of the way it's structured, and this is common all across the South, 8,200 kids and their university would disappear.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Because I was just thinking in terms of what would that money that the Auburn is going to spend. You know, that's a pretty, you know, it's horribly, horribly conservative there. But that's a pretty damned fine engineering school in its own right.
Well, of course it is. They've got an extraordinary, of all the things, you know, you and I have made jokes about cowhouse and barn and all the rest of it, but computer sciences at that university are acknowledged around the world. I worked with one of their just plain computer grads. good Lord, I thought I was talking to Bill Gates's, you know, real brain. But seriously, my state, if those idiot rich guys that have $11 to $13 million to put Fat Phil out to pasture would drop that on Tennessee Tech or just into the university system, you know, it might give them another week or 10 days to think about how best to deal with this. But at a time when nearly $40 million can be spent on football coaches that might produce a better record on the field, if Tennessee closed their gap, it would knock down a university with over 8,000 students in it and a fine reputation around the world.
Well, here, let's add to that. Let's add to that red ink, because there's a little institution sort of to the east of Knoxville, along about Columbia, South Carolina, that just ate a big wad to get rid of Tommy Bowden, didn't they?
Oh, I don't know. I just, you know, I'm just aware of those three. Oh, but sure. Well, what did I just hear the other day? That, you know, University of Alabama is still paying money to the guy that came before David Shula. That's how screwy that stuff can be.
Yeah.
But in terms of priorities and what we care about, you know, we're going to build a – we're going to spend several hundred million dollars to put up a fence between us and Mexico that won't really matter, but could put American citizens south of a fence that will ruin 150-year-old family farms. We got money to do that.
Oh, yeah, plenty of money.
We're not willing to spend money on bridges in Minnesota so that people don't get killed driving to work, and we can't keep universities open. And the only way we want to offer scholarships is to pull money out of poor communities by selling them bloody lottery tickets.
I know. You know, I saw a study not too long back, David, about the money that universities spend to buy themselves a winning program. You know who was in the top five of that list? Texas Tech.
Oh, yeah.
And some economist was quoted in there saying, listen, this is an unsustainable model. It's a fool's model. And you can't buy this stuff. But nobody, you know, but a university president, what does that guy do? He's a fundraiser and a glad hander, isn't he?
You hope that's all he is.
Yeah, because much more, and it gets dangerous.
Exactly. He starts making important decisions. If he's not just having long lunches and, you know, getting Billy Joe Fred Bob to write some big-ass checks, you know, he could actually hurt something.
And just to make sure that everybody understands that this isn't some Southern-centric problem, there's a report that came out, 2 days ago maybe, that the state of West Virginia got an F, that's F as in fail, epic fail, in its higher education the access grading. In other words, the state of West Virginia got an F in its ability to get kids out of its own high schools and into its own colleges and universities.
That's what I'm talking about. We're more and more, this is across the country, you know, that one of the things that made America incredibly successful starting in 1947, when those GI Bill guys got to finish those last 2 years of college that they interrupted to go fight World War II, but they could go to college on that olive drab hook, that's when America started to grow. And the Republicans have successfully turned that around. Every year, it's harder and harder. I worked jobs, some of them union, some of them not, but I worked jobs to pay my way through the University of Tennessee in the 60s. I finished the University of Tennessee with a reasonably good business engineering blend education, and I didn't owe anybody anything. You can't do that now.
That don't happen. Now, there's a trend out there toward it, but the sad thing is the government of, you know, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, has not only not taken a hand in that, but has stepped away from any active promotion of that. I guess, what is it? The Ivy Leagues, if your family income is what, less than 60 grand, they'll let you in on a walk. Berea and Williams do it too.
If I'm a really bright 18-year-old, as things stand right now, and I believe this is true, I'm thinking really quickly here, and it's a little dangerous, but if I have this correct, if I'm a brilliant 18-year-old with a slam-bang application process, whatever the hell you do, it's more likely that I get a free ride to Harvard than the University of Tennessee.
Yes.
Or Alabama.
Yes.
Because they're so endowed, they're looking for kids like that. But so many other places are not.
And the thing is, now nobody loves the liberal arts more than I do, David. This program's sort of a little living monument to my jack of all trades and master of none education. But we need engineers. If we're going to talk about the greening of the economy, if we're going to talk about creating more companies like that little outfit you just described a little bit ago, we need engineers. And frankly,
nobody loves the creative type more than I, but I'm sorry. On his best day, Kurt Cobain never offered a damn thing to solar panel design.
No, nor I. But we're talking about the places that teach the things that we need for this economy. And yeah, we need people to write songs about the green economy and poetry about the green economy and do really good journalism about the green economy. But somebody's got to design the damn thing. And the people that the people that can be taught how to design the thing have to go to schools. You know, everybody can't go to the Caltech or MIT or and that's why there are beautiful, beautiful schools like Tennessee Tech doing magnificent work. There's there's literally a little school down the mountain and across the river from me. They call it MIT. It's actually WVU Tech. They call it, it's in Montgomery, so they call it MIT, Montgomery Institute of Technology. That's a joke.
Okay.
Every year there's a debate as to how much longer that school can survive.
And, you know, there's a process. The Japanese do this. In my previous working life, I got to meet a bunch of Germans from Mercedes-Benz, no less. And I've heard about it in other countries that aggressively go out and search. You don't have to be a starving student and beg to be noticed. If you're at West Virginia Tech, and I'm bulling the name, but if you're that brilliant kid that, you know, toward the end of their junior year is just blowing the doors off of that place, there's another university that's looking for you if you're in Germany, because they want to pull you into the big school. They want to give you a scholarship to Michigan or MIT or Caltech or Purdue. They want to pull you up because you've demonstrated that you might have something to offer later on. Oh, gee whiz, the Germans? Oh, year in, year out, over $200 billion a year in surplus coming into their country because they've got companies that actually have people buy things from them around the world. Golly. Well, if you're going to sell something now, you have to be in R&D 20 years ago, and you have to be in manufacturing sophistications 10 years ago, and you have to be in manufacturing management 5 years ago, and then, out of the blue, 20 years later, you get to create a big bank account for your nation. Oops, we're not doing that.
Not even a little bit of it. And just for the fun.
All we want to do is write funny paper and make a big bonus that year and go to the Hamptons and laugh.
Yeah. And meanwhile, one of those first-year professors, or maybe a graduate assistant at Auburn or UT or Alabama, those guys make what coming in?
Squat.
Yeah. Yeah. Meanwhile,
all those up-and-comers in the downturn, who's going to get the axe? It's not going to be the tenured guy who is a well-meaning individual and,
Didn't I read somewhere that Auburn's laying off professors?
Ding, 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 we have a winner.
And granted, I've heard it described to both Joe Paterno and Bobby Knight that, you know, how many tickets did you sell for the chemistry exam? I've heard, and I don't know which one said it. And there's an element of truth in it, but at what point in time do we confess that we have completely reversed the anatomy of the dog so that the tail is the head?
And 8 to 10 to 12 months after that star jock or jockette leaves the university, the payoff for the university and the world is what? Oh, what is it again? I can't quite hear you. What? Absolutely nothing. I think you're right. Unless, of course, you happen to own the New York WhizCaps and then said jock is playing for you and earning you as an owner worth hundreds of millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars more. But that system's not going to carry us. That system's not going to carry us into a better time 30 years from now. Wait a second. Bread and circus. Who did that not work for after all? Bread and circus.
Right.
Come to me in a minute. I'll get there. I promise. Give me a hint.
Rome.
That's an R.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And it does. Well, it generally doesn't work down through the ages. Because everybody tries it sooner or later.
Nor does it work down to the guy on the street very much either.
Yeah, not so much. But
all right, that's enough. That's enough Tennessee. That's enough sports. You got the board level.
Yeah, but you know what? This ain't David. In all truth, don't sell anything short. That ain't this. This ain't a sports conversation. This is because the fact of the matter is, whether it's you sitting in the stands at Neyland Stadium or me at, oh God, what is it now? Milan Puskar Stadium at Mountaineer Field. Hey.
How do you say that with a straight face?
That's why we don't do video.
Can you imagine what a good peak sophomore could turn that into?
Oh,
third quarter.
It's already been done. Trust me. I got it from my dad. I'm such a geek that when they were talking about naming the state, because there was a time there there was talk. Oh, we got to name it after Don Neyland. I'm like, I will never set foot in the place again if you do. But my father said, you know what? It ought to be Ira Everett Rogers Stadium. And for the sports fans out there, I highly encourage a lookup of Ira Everett Rogers. Beautiful thing. Pappy. Everybody's got their traditions, and he was one of them.
Those traditions, you know, taken in the proper dose, those are wonderful things, but when you've got these behemoth athletic departments doing what they're doing and pulling the money out of the community, it's a sickening thing. Well, take some fresh callers. Move on to international keys or tap and ballet or who knows what.
Bula Bula.
Exactly.
Dadgum Sooners ripping off an Ivy League fight song and thinking it's never mind.
Boomer Sooners, yeah. Old damn state got their reputation built on stealing and thievery. Yeah, I love those guys.
Yeah, that's what I said. They even stole the damn fight song.
It's in their nature, just like that scorpion on the leaf. Or the
on the back of the frog, yeah.
That's what they do.
See you, David. Bye.
Bye.
Quickly, before I go to another call, just because I raised it, Ira Everett Rogers, Pappy Rogers, at one time voted the best athlete in America in the quarter century, in the first 25 years of the 20th century. Guy went on at West Virginia University. Guy, all America and baseball, went on to become the golf coach, I think, and taught chemistry. Anybody here want to just sort of imagineer your way into what chemistry class with Nick Saban would be like? Just asking. Priorities, people. Priorities. Oh, darn. Yeah. How many tickets to the chemistry exam did you sell? Well, damn, Nick, if you're teaching the chemistry class, I'm pretty sure we could fill the house. Oh, God. Well, I'm sorry I lost that last call. We got about 25 minutes or so. If you want to jump in on the conversation, you're more than welcome. You know the number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. 304-658-3333 is the direct dial number if you want to save us a nickel or a buck. And email rolls in to bob@headonradio.com. Or in the alternative, you can do bobkincaid@gmail.com. They both work equally well. So, well, let's back up for just a minute here, assuming that my machine is not going to crash here in a moment. Pray. Totally different subject. Got any grandparents in the audience? Any new parents? Aunts, uncles? Love that new little baby. Well, let's take a run at Beckley, West Virginia. Beautiful Beckley, West Virginia. Wait. No, we'll go to the phones instead, I think. Because that's much more important. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Hey, Gene, what's up?
Well, a little personal update here for you. Remember last month when I called in from film about the fireman that showed up at my house?
Yeah, I do.
Wasn't there?
Yeah, a little disturbing.
Well, yeah. Well, the lady came by today to fix the unit, you know, because they said, well, there's probably a unit in the building and that's making it trip off and blah, blah, blah. And so she called the office and they, you know, they're talking and she comes back out and said, so is it like a, are there other units in the building? She said, no. The guy at the office told her it was probably, you know, like an aircraft carrier or some kind of military signal that's setting it off. We're 80 miles inland, Bob.
Do what?
Yeah, apparently, some types of military signals can set off, life alert buttons.
That's some signal.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I don't know of any military bases around here. I'm sure there are some, but there isn't anything in my immediate area. So my paranoia.
Yeah, that's Hillsboro, right?
Yeah, that's Hillsboro. I mean, my paranoia meter, my needle just begged right there. It's like, oh boy.
But then again, it was in the Great Northwest, was it not, where we had the story, what, a year or so ago, where the, what was it? The Homeland Security guy chased down some who was standing in the median during some, I don't know, Bush was out there. So, standing in the median with the radiation detector, and a car goes by, and they chase it for miles, and when they get done with the high-speed chase, it turns out that there was a cat in the car that had some sort of radioactive chemotherapy.
This is like happened, like I said, three or four times, and they gave me a new unit. We'll see if it works, or if I keep getting those signals, or whatever. But it just makes me, my paranoia meter just pegged when she said that thing about the naval vessels. It's like, oh no. Because I'm thinking, well, you know, we talk about the militarization of police departments and stuff like that. And I haven't had any problems with the Hillsboro police per se, but I've heard people who have. And it makes you wonder. I guess that's the thing that really gets me. I mean, and I suppose it's a good thing, really. It makes me wonder. I mean, there are a lot of things I used to worry about in the world, but the government really wasn't one of them. Now.
Now.
And I realize I'm sounding a little naive, and I'm sorry, but I mean, this paranoia thing is just, it's so new on this front anyway. I mean, I have lots of paranoia, but governmental paranoia is just not necessarily one of them. Anyway, I should probably let you go so somebody else can come in, but I just had to update you on the lifeline thing.
And I appreciate it because we have to. There's no answer to some of this stuff. I read a fascinating article yesterday about a guy who accidentally broke the internet. He was like a counter hacker type.
Oh, lovely.
And this went back several years, but you know, people they're identifying flaws that could easily have been exploited by the wrong sorts of people.
Well,
and what was it? How long ago was it that story came out, Gene, about the entire Department of Defense getting hacked?
Oh goodness!
I mean, this was a couple of weeks.
Yeah, the latest one. Yeah, that's been just a couple of weeks, and thing is just something's got to.
Yeah, this is a Republican administration that couldn't even figure out an email server.
Oh, yeah, I called the guys in from the Geek Squad to go fix that.
Yeah, in the little black and white Volkswagen Beetles. Exactly.
Oh, lovely. Oh, man. You got to love that capitalism, man. Private ownership is just...
What, what can't the private sector do? Quick answer, almost anything.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll catch you later.
All right, take care, Gene.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Gene, and a whole bunch of the stuff he sends me never makes it to air. It just makes me better at what I do, because I don't know. Maybe this is that scene out of a beautiful mind where the guy's going, cutting little pieces out of highlights for children, the razor blade, and then there's a big conspiracy on the one. But sooner or later, all this stuff does kind of dovetail, doesn't it? It's almost impossible to escape. Now, all right, got to do this. Got to get this out of my system. Because we talked about Plaxico Burress busting a cap in his own leg with a .40 caliber Smith & Wesson. You know, National Republican Rifle Association... is constantly touting it. We have gun owner education programs, and that is the only way to keep gun violence and gun tragedies from happening. You know, it's the exact opposite of the right-wing abstinence sex argument. You know, they want to argue that the only way to keep from getting a sexually transmitted disease is to not have sex. Right? Never mind the condoms. No. Because if you mention a condom to an abstinence-only right-wing fundamentalist literalist for pig-licking, they'll say, well, the condoms break. I mean, that's how we got our first baby. She poked a hole in the condom with a needle. But you never, if you say something along the same lines to a right-wing or pig-licking the gun owner, they go ballistic. What do you mean not own a gun? Guns is American. America was founded on the right to arm bears. I asked earlier, you got grandkids? Kids? Babies? Little ones? Yeah, we worry about what's in the formula we're feeding to the little ones. Because there's no way of knowing what kind of garbage and filth is coming from China. Because capitalist America doesn't think it's profitable to make the stuff in this country and pay people a decent living wage to make it. So instead we get poison-laced baby formula from China. But we have our own problems here. You know, Loney is, 18, 19 months old now. And she's just getting to that point where she delivers entire monologues in a language I don't speak. And it's driving me nuts because I want to know what she's thinking. Because you can see the wheels turning and that magnificent little light in her eyes. And then we talk. We talk. I do a lot of, mm-hmm, yep, you betcha. And listen really hard to hear the words, because the words are coming, and it's my fault, not hers. And we play. And I toss her up in the air, and, you know, all that. Yes, I catch her. I'm very careful. And she squeals with delight. And she is the light of this house, she and her baby brother. And you play with them. And you, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you. And you reach her and you tickle a little. And it's beautiful. Well, Gary Wayne Garretson played that kind of game. He's 43 years old. He's from Coal City, West Virginia, near Beckley. He played with his little boy. His little 3-year-old boy. And I can hardly get through this. Gary Wayne Garretson, 43 years old, of Coal City, West Virginia, would take his shotgun and point it at his 3-year-old son and say, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you. And his little 3-year-old son would say, you can't get me, Daddy. You can't get me. You're my daddy. And then Gary Wayne Garretson would pull the trigger. This past Saturday, Gary Wayne Garretson pulled the trigger, and the gun went off and blew his little boy to Jesus. Am I going to get you? Am I going to... Bang! The shooting was reported to authorities at 12:50 p.m. Saturday. When police arrived, they found little Anthony Garretson, 3 years old, dead at the scene. No one was present in the residence when the incident occurred, according to the report. Gary Wayne Garretson, 43, of Coal City, West Virginia, has been charged with death of a child by parent, guardian, custodian, or other person by child abuse. 12-gauge shotgun, by the way. Not that it really matters. He's being held in the Southern Regional Jail. There is no word as to whether or not he has been admitted to bond. Can't help but think that maybe they might want to just slide the door open and put the belt and the shoelaces back in the cell. I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you. The hell? You're 43 years old, you've got a 3-year-old son, and you're playing with your son with a shotgun? We at the NRA believe our firearms education program is the only way to prevent tragedies that occur not because of the gun, but because of misuse of the gun. Owning firearms is almost a requirement for citizenship in this state. It's hunting season here. People taking down deer. Saw a lot of giggling on a message board the other day, last night, as a matter of fact, by people giggling about it, the fact that a man had been deer hunting and shot the deer. The deer went down. He went up to finish the job. The deer got up and attacked him, you know, with what a buck has to attack with, to wit, his claws, not claws, but his paws, not paws, his hooves and his antlers. And the people on the message board, oh, that's just funny. That murderer got what was coming to him. Dang deer hunters. I wish to God Gary Wayne Garretson, 43, of Coal City, West Virginia, had been able to go deer hunting on Saturday. Law enforcement are saying that issues regarding motive or other circumstances involving the case are still under investigation. And but by the way, for those of you wondering, Gary Wayne Garretson faces a maximum penalty of 10 to 40 years in prison if convicted. Now, if he gets the max, which he won't, that would make him 83 when released. That might vary. Inside a brutal thing like the West Virginia prison sentence system, that's a life sentence. But also in West Virginia, if you happen to get killed while wandering around a hillside during hunting season, the maximum penalty is a year, and it's not even in prison, it's in the county jail. And it's not a felony, it's a misdemeanor. Shooting a human being or other livestock, I think, is what the crime is called. But we can't talk. Just a reminder, we can't talk about common sense regulations with regard to firearms, because firearms are more important in this country than little three-year-old boys or little three-year-old girls. What in God's name did Plaxico Burress, a multimillionaire, need in New York City, in a very, very nice place to live? What did he need with a Glock 40 Smith & Wesson? Well, that was his right under the Second Amendment. You know, he need that Glock 40 Smith & Wesson in case he ever had to defend his home against a government invasion. Because, you know, Obama's going to get all them guns. Sorry, doesn't work for me. Yeah. Tragedy at the level previously attained only by the ancient Greeks. Somebody hand Gary Wayne Garretson Yocasta's toga pins so he can gouge out his eyes and wander the surface of the earth forevermore, that others may know the horror that he is. Mercy? Sympathy? No, I don't think so. Had a brother once. He didn't know the gun was loaded either. It wasn't pointed at his or some other little three-year-old son. He didn't have one. It was pointed at the side of his head when a girl who thought he was terribly cute and was flirting with him said, "Oh, no, don't do it, and reached over and pulled the trigger and splattered my brother's brains up against the wall. Well, see, this is a failure to educate on that. No. We still have a couple of firearms here with us, locked and put away, accessible only to adults. I used to have a lot more. But when little shining-eyed babies came into my life, we sold them off. I know a man, he's my friend, who lost his son. That way. Just about all of us know someone, if it's not within our own family, know someone who has been victimized by the insane deal with the devil that this country makes that trades a bullshit, testosterone-fueled constitutional right for the lives of 3-year-old little boys and 16-year-old big brothers. But don't worry. The for-profit media will never tell you about little Anthony Gerritsen. But I feel a little better having remembered him myself and shared his little 3-year-old life with you. No word on the Right to Life websites about little 3-year-old Anthony Gerritsen. Because he wasn't a fetus anymore, and by God, he didn't matter. Nope. It was reported in the Beckley paper. And not much further. But at least you can remember Anthony Gerritsen. But I'm going to get you. Thanks, everybody. Great conversations tonight. I had a feeling it was going to be a good night, and it was. Thanks to John Fox and Peter Godbold, respectively, our chief engineer and our IT professional. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, who makes everything you hear on the horn happen via WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the bravest, hardest-working people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. If you have not called the governor's office of West Virginia, there is still time to do so. Please do so. With Massey Energy on the verge of collapse, we have a real chance to make the future happen on Coal River Mountain. You can be part of making that future happen. Thank you to everyone who contributes of their energies, their time, and their hard-earned dollars to keep this enterprise going. Thank you. And always, 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 RMR, Gina. It's all for you.
That way.
Tonight by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! don't you just love the way John Fox says, cussing and a discussing? I think we're going to have to craft a certificate suitable for framing and make him an honorary hillbilly or something. Wouldn't that be, yeah, that's a good idea, isn't it? I'm feeling a little froggy this evening. I was touched almost beyond words when I saw the news about Bank of America's decision to phase out funding of mountaintop removal. You know, when the show was over, I put my ear to the wind, and on the passing breeze, I could almost hear, like something out of, here's our obligatory nightly Star Trek reference, something like that shot of Kirk in the middle of the planet screaming, "Con!" as Don Blankenship caught a terminal case of the turtle squirts. No! Yep. Because, you know, it's not like Massey Energy doesn't already have a brand spanking new, fresh little, rejected by the Supreme Court $225 million judgment against it. Yeah, that's million. And the possibility of having a judgment in the future in the amount of $75 million reinstated against it. I love it when the good guys start winning, don't you? Yeah, yes, 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 yes. And I wanted to start with a couple of emails as well that had come in because, it's so gratifying when you all pick up on the sense of victory. This from Horn Critic at Large, Reverbo. I was listening last night and heard your letter in response to the so-called Friends of Coal article. Subject, a lot of meaning in three words. I was listening last night and heard your letter in response to the so-called Friends of Coal article in the Register Herald. As you were reading and talking about the latest news on mountaintop removal front, I clicked over to the blog and stared at the photo of what's left of Cayford Mountain. Needless to say, the end of your show was extremely moving. Perhaps the people who really care about what happens to your beautiful state and its proud citizens have absorbed the meaning of West Virginia's motto. It's on the state seal and reads, Montani Semper Liberi. Mountaineers are always free. Well, thanks, Reverbo. I thought that meant that the library was on a mountain or the Mount the Librarian or something. But no, mountaineers are always free. You have all come a long way toward freeing yourselves of misery, destruction, and death from those who exist only to rape and disgrace your state and are only interested in themselves. From these enemies of goodness, health, and light, you will be free, and of that there is no doubt. And